Otto, are you still there?
Done. I think he stepped away to get his beer.
I gotta go.
Yeah, drain video.
It's time to drain the pink pony. I'll be right back.
I'm so glad that's a meme we have now.
The pink pony show.
So oh, very beer. Glad.
Ah, beer. Yes.
Don't get me wrong, PBR is good. But sometimes, man, sometimes I just need a good beer.
Need something real.
You know, PBR in Philly is like. It's big. Everywhere you go has PBR cans, tall boys, everywhere. It's awesome.
Well, we all my local bars have the PBR on tap, and don't get me wrong, I love it, but man, it wears you down.
I don't think I've ever had a PBR on tap.
Oh, it's great. I love it. It's actually better than the cans. Not much better.
Well, I believe it.
Brandon just asked in the chat, I guess we'll still take questions. Well, why the hell not? Wanted to know from you, Otto, what you and Nason use for communication and task tracking internally and whether you use P2 like Automattic does.
We have a P2 for Audrey, and mostly for communication, it's we have a Skype channel for all of the Audrey we use for everything. Mm-hmm. But a lot of what we do, like he's talking about right now, is public. So, like, when I talk to any of the theme guys, it's on the theme reviewers mailing list, or it's on their make blog, which is a P2 blog. All the core stuff, I mean, they do all that on IRC. So it's pretty much all the same public channels. The only time we're talking directly is just coordinating what we're doing when. And we do have a sort of an internal P2 blog for that. But that, again, mostly the P2 is for task tracking. We have a Skype channel for me, Matt, Nason, Scott, Rose, that we all chat on.
Which what's the word for Rose again? I need to remember this.
She termed herself accelerant.
Accelerant. I'm gonna have to write accelerant.
I like that job title. Accelerant.
That's what she's got on her business card.
That might just have to be the show title. That's such a great word. I'm a fan.
Accelerant.
Rose wears like six different hats. So
well, that's I think why I probably stumbled and mistakenly called her an accountant, and I feel bad for that now.
No, don't feel bad. She was actually complaining about doing all the accountancy this last week, so that's why it was funny.
Fair enough. I haven't checked out yet, but I've been meaning to since talking to the Buddy Press guys last week. It's like the status theme, I think is what they're calling it. It's. Let me check still up on the with all the talk about P2.
I haven't seen it yet, but that thing that Nason's talking about in the chat, the X's and O's,
mm-hmm.
That is really cool. That changes everything with P2 because you can just type like the lowercase O,
yeah,
and then you know some text and do that, and it makes it into a checkbox. And then when somebody checks it off, it puts their name beside it and saves it sort of with Ajax. Just built into the theme.
Huh.
Almost like a task. Like when you add it, it's like a task.
It crosses it off and it shows that they did it.
Yeah.
That is cool.
You can use an X to sort of pre-do that. It's friggin' amazing. It makes it just so much better for working with the P2 as a task list.
That would help, yeah.
That's awesome.
P2 is interesting because we've used it. We tried to use it internally for our, you know, for web dev. It just didn't work out. But I used it like 2 years ago for the first WordCamp we did, 2010, and we organized the entire WordCamp through P2. And I was surprised. Like, if people use it and they use it, you know, consistently, it actually is really good for that type of stuff. It's good for communication, figuring things out, organizing. You know, I was shocked. I didn't think it would work that well, but it worked really well.
It's super cool for that. Yeah,
I find it more useful with a bigger group. Or I don't know if useful is the right word, but the level of interaction and so on seems to be more robust, and you get more out of it, I think, with a bigger group.
I know somebody at Automattic told me they actually had more internal P2s than they had people.
Holy shit.
Like they'll roll up a new P2 for every little project and just, you know, manage it that way, and I think it's brilliant.
It's funny because, like, anytime I'm at a WordCamp and I'm chatting with some automaticians, I'm always picking their ear on what they're using because, you know, you're obviously a really, really, you're Audrey Capital, but Automattic's obviously a large distributed company, which we are. We're not nearly that size, but there's some major challenges when you're distributed. I mean, I'm sure even with, you know, the few people Audrey Capital has, there's always those challenges of not being there in person together. Oh, so right, I'm always picking people's ear, like, what are you using and what works, you know? And it's always the same thing. P2, Skype, and IRC is what everyone tells me. P2, Skype, IRC.
Well, it's Automatic like trifecta is obviously
of distributed companies.
Automatic is obviously a lot more distributed than we are. I mean, 110 people in 70-odd countries.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
And, but
it just, like, yeah, scares they, me they, thinking they use P2 managing
to
that.
Them out. They use a lot of the Jabber stuff to communicate with WordPress.com and the Automatic mm-hmm. systems, which is pretty cool.
Sorry about that, Otto.
That's okay. I haven't quite gotten into Jabber yet, but it's pretty clever.
Yeah, I haven't played with it much either. I same sentiment, Brad. You know, we're completely dispersed, but hell, we're what, 10 people to going on what, 12 here soon? Crazy to think over 100 folks all over the globe and managing that. That's just bananas, man. Awesome. One day, hopefully.
Why don't I not have a banana sound effect yet? I really need that B-A-N-A-N-A-S.
I'm gonna do you? Note,
right? I'm going to task myself really? With that right now.
I please, please do.
I want to make a little task list of just sound effects I need to get throughout the week. Maybe I'll fire up a P2.
I'll practice my muting.
Oh, man. Otto, question for you, sir. In terms of WP Late Night, what would you like to see and how do you think we can improve?
Getting right to it.
Yeah, that's right down to the wire. I like it. I mean, I haven't seen anything I didn't like. I mean, usually I don't always watch the video.
Sure.
I subscribe to several different podcasts, most of WP Candies. But like I say, I'm busy during most of the week. The main time I listen to the podcasts is when I'm driving to WordCamps.
Mm.
Which is kind of weird. But the thing is, I drive a lot to all these WordCamps. I'm driving to Kansas City in, well, I guess next week. And that's like an 8-hour drive. So, you know, I'll listen to like 3 or 4 in a row. And I think it's all right. I think a lot of times they seem like they're forced short, which makes sense. I get it.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, the after show is a good idea.
So you think forced short? I mean, we've talked internally and a little nervous that we're going too long sometimes.
I know some people prefer the short thing, and I get the reasoning behind it. I just prefer it long because, like I say, I'm listening to it for a very long time, you know, in the
car. That makes sense.
And it's a lot easier to listen to when you don't have to be switching every few, you know, every half hour or whatever.
Absolutely. You know, it's funny you mentioned that because Brandon Dove, organizer for Orange County, same thing. He was on a long road trip here recently. He's like, yeah, I just, you know, threw you guys on. You guys made my trip semi-enjoyable, right? So that's cool to hear that that folks are doing that type of thing. I like that.
One thing that would probably help is I noticed the after shows tend to end pretty quickly. If those mm-hmm. were a little longer, and if the aftertaste, if there was like a feed that had both the show and the after show sort of together or in a row or something, that would be pretty cool to subscribe to, because then I could just sort of let the feed play, you know, for
right.
a long period of time.
Rather,
I could see that.
And that way it'd be continuous, more or less.
Yeah, I see what you mean.
And in terms of the aftertaste there, Ryan, you know, we're yapping for quite a while, most every week afterwards. So I don't know that that'd be too challenging to do.
Well, I like the, you know, shorter shows are good for the greatest number of people, like we were saying. And the aftertaste is a nice compromise. That way, you know, all of the most essential stuff or the most interesting stuff is inevitably going to show up in the first hour, 45 minutes, whatever the sort of the show, you know, high end ends up being. And mm-hmm. then having the aftertaste is great for everybody else who wants to, which is a good number of people. And that's kind of why we do the after shows, because a good number of people like listening to that.
Sure.
As far as the combined feed, I mean, we have the master shows feed, which is basically all of the podcasts together. But I don't think, you know, I think what you're saying, Otto, is more of a combined audio file that puts both back to back.
We need the
not necessarily even that.
Yahoo Pipes isn't around.
Yeah, just a separate feed to combine the two together might be worth it. I don't know how mm-hmm. much effort. Actually, I mean, you're doing this through all plugins. You could probably write it. It's not that difficult.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, like I said, really the only combined one that we have right now is just the master everything. Feed that's everything. So it might be worth having what would it be? It'd be sort of like WP Late Night Deluxe or something that would be...
Just combining the after show.
Just combining the after show with the... With the show itself.
We got to come up with a crazier name than that. Come on, man.
Like, you know, I think that's pretty good. Are you kidding me? To just pull that out?
WP Deluxe.
WP Late Night Deluxe.
Come on, man. I'm enjoying the discussion in IRC here where Brandon Dove's actually in there and said that day he was on his drive, a 10-hour show would have been great.
as long as you don't call it, WP Premium. I don't want to hear that again.
Wow.
Yeah, don't worry. There's no chance of that.
Premium edition.
The premium edition.
premium edition, we'd have to start delivering a subpar product and charging for it, right? That's how it works?
Yeah, sorry. Pete Maul, WP late night.
After party.
The after party. After taste.
The after
hotel
party
lobby.
All right, we'll workshop that. We'll figure that out.
Same question actually goes for the IRC channel. Fire away with recommendations, topics you'd like to see, things that we could do to make the show better. We want to grow this.
The idea of a shorter show is tough. Like trying to do a podcast in 30 minutes. I've been on a few podcasts and we've always started out saying, hey, let's be 30 minutes. I feel like it's an impossible unless all you talk about is like one topic. Because if you're passionate about what you're talking about, which you should be if you're doing a podcast, we're all pretty passionate here. Like it's easy to take one topic and run for 30 minutes with it. We talked about I think we didn't get after just opening up in the first topic, we didn't get past that. We were 30 minutes into the show before we got into the second topic. You know, it's just making them smaller in theory is a good idea, but it's really hard to do.
Like, I think you have to decide whether you're going to do sort of an expedited news show or a discussion show. At the point where,
especially when there's drinking involved,
make that decision. Right. This is obviously a discussion.
That makes
show.
It even worse.
There is never drinking involved.
And all of, I mean, we
WP Kegger. I like it, Otto. That's not bad. Now we're getting somewhere, right?
WP Late Night, the Hangover Edition.
Yeah, the morning after. Oh, yeah.
WP Morning After Feed.
Really, Hair of the Dog.
The Hair of the Dog. Oh man, fire! You guys are so creative.
So Otto, what's the best way to? Keep up, because I'm pissed at myself that I wasn't aware of this X's and O's update to P2.
And, I didn't even know about it until last week.
Okay, but I'm just so then the first thing I did, because I guess I spend more time looking at plugin pages than I do theme pages, and so I went to the P2 .org page expecting to like, okay, let me check the description or the change log or all these things. And I mean, do you see any of the sort of elements from the plugins directory kind of feeding over into the themes directory at any point? In particular, in regards to like, I don't know, additional. I mean, because I feel like if P2 were a plugin, which would be cool by the way, but if P2 were a plugin, that would be sort of on the other notes page or obviously
the
change log.
On the change log. Yeah.
Yeah, that it would show, here's what was added.
Very long term, I want to see the plugin directory. And the themes directory become sort of the same thing, but separate, obviously.
Sure.
Right now, both plugins and themes are run off of separate BB Press installs, and I've been bugging me. The theme reviewer guys have been bugging me for a while now that they want the same kind of readme text stuff for themes. Mm-hmm. So it's sort of a structured readme text where people can put in change logs and it can show up in certain ways and things like that. I don't have any plans to do that immediately. We've been sort of waiting on a grand scale redesign, which probably will never come. But at some point, we're going to have to upgrade to the BB Press plugin for the support forums, which we're currently not running.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to do
a few fun day.
That'll be a fun week. we're sort of waiting on several things for that to happen. When we do that, we're not going to be converting the themes and plugins directories to the new BB Press. We're going to be rewriting them as plugins, most likely. Mm-hmm. So they'll be running on their own sort of, or at least I hope, they'll be running on their own sort of WordPress install with a plugin that manages a directory. Mm-hmm. And those will probably be public plugins to do that sort of thing. So anybody can do it. So at some point, the themes and plugins directory will converge into the same sort of system, but with, you know, notable differences. But I'm pretty sure the README tech stuff will eventually, and I say eventually in terms of like 2 years, will eventually become feasible and doable. Right now, the way themes works is very oriented towards theme developers who don't necessarily need to understand the nuances of SVN and development and things like that. So, yeah, it'll take a while for that to happen, but it'll get there eventually.
SVN.
Has there been any? And this
I very much doubt theme developers will ever embrace, you know, a repository system. They're perfectly content to build a zip and upload it. So,
oh yeah, no, that's absolutely true.
And you know, that's easier for theme developers to do, and so that'll probably be still there in some fashion. But hopefully, we'll combine that system somehow, because right now they're sort of similar but different. But the README stuff, the changelog, all that will eventually happen. It's just got to. It's just a matter of there's got to be a lot of things come together. You know, we have to upgrade a lot of org. We have to upgrade support forms. We have to upgrade a lot of core to be able to use that information. There has to be reason to do it, essentially. Once we have a good reason, you know, it's there.
Well, beyond those other things that you know, I think would be really good changes. I think the source control is a really important piece of any type of development, whether you're looking at the themes or the plugin piece. I don't know if it'd be the greatest of ideas to move away from that. I think that you're teaching and in turn making people aware of better ways to maybe manage those things, you know, over time as they're putting out revisions and so on. I don't know. That's a great habit to get people into. I mean, but on the other side of that, is that something that should be pushed on them? Right. A lot of the complaints that I've seen through the theme review process is exactly that. Right. Is it's maybe a bit cumbersome for certain theme developers to get that stuff up there. So what's right and what's wrong?
Right. Exactly. The thing about that is that for themes in particular, we need to support. I think in the long run, both. There's no reason we can't give a theme author SVN control over their theme and let them release that way. Absolutely. It's just a matter of infrastructure and teaching and getting them to the point where they can understand that reasonably. And a lot of theme authors now are writing plugins, so they've kind of learned it that way. So
I think it's neat.
In the long run, maybe. Probably for selected theme authors at first and then roll out to everybody. I don't know. But that is a very long way.
Have there been any larger conversations around SVN versus Git in the future of all this?
Yes and no, in that everybody talks about it, nobody wants to do it.
Yeah, that would be a monstrous job.
Oh boy. Good times.
So much infrastructure is built around SVN, and there's no reason to change it to Git because it doesn't buy you anything. Not at first. I mean, not immediately. So a lot of what we have in SVN is release system. I mean, all of WordPress.org is in one big SVN, and when I want to release it, I check in a change and run a command, and it deploys it directly from SVN to all of our servers. So changing that would be a nightmarish pain.
I giggle because, yes, it would be.
And also
yeah, I don't doubt it would take a lot of work.
Have you even tried to use Git on Windows? Oh, my God, it's a pain. I hate Git because I use Windows. It's just a pain to use, and it hasn't gotten to the point where I can consider it usable. I actually was talking earlier, I use SVN to talk to GitHub.
Wow.
And it's the only way I can use GitHub because I can't use Tortoise Git. It's terrible. The Git stuff that comes they do with Cygwin is awful. And the Cygwin stuff, it's painful. I just don't like it. Not that I can't use it. I know how it works. I get it, but I hate it. Tortoise makes just SVN easy for me. And I'm going to go the easiest route that lets me do what I want to do.
Oh, no, I like Git, but, man, I'll tell you what, I've been using SVN for so long. I just, it's comfortable.
Well, I think it comes down to...
It's not a broken system by any means.
I think it comes down to what you're trained to do, because using Git is very much oriented towards extremely large projects with a lot of different people managing different pieces, and it makes merging very easy, and it makes things like that very easy. But if your project is relatively small, like a plugin or a theme, you don't have a lot of committers on it, then you can coordinate yourselves. You don't need something as complicated as Git to do that. Mm-hmm. It might help with the core, but until the core changes and they have no desire to change, then except for, like, I think Jakewith wants to, but Jakewith loves Git. So I don't know. Until something major happens that sort of forces the issue, nah, I'm okay with SVN for now. I think for smaller projects it works. I know some people disagree, but
RMQ and
Ryan in chat is saying that he likes it easier for smaller projects. I disagree, because for smaller projects, SVN, I can throw up an SVN in a matter of minutes. And yes, I can pop open a GitHub or something the same way. But then, you know, I'm having to teach people how to use it, or I'm having to learn how to use it myself, or whatever. We don't, it's like Nathan's saying, we don't rewrite things just to change. We need a reason. If it works, it works. And until you get some benefit out of it, it doesn't make sense to spend time rewriting as opposed to creating something new.
Well, what's the overhead versus the actual value over time, right? I mean, it's working.
And it works really well right now for what it does.
It's interesting. It's interesting because a lot of the devs out there are kind of migrating in that direction. You know, most devs that I interact with and talk with, they're all using Git now. And I don't. I'm still an SVN. I like SVN. I've kind of always told everyone, and that's what we do at WebDev, we all use SVN. And I tell everyone the reason we do that is because that's what WordPress uses. Why do I want to use something where there's a different – I have to take a different path to get it to where it's, I can make – you know, push up my plugins and stuff into WordPress and have to go down this kind of conversion between Git and SVN. If WordPress uses SVN, that's what we use, and that's what we're going to stick with until, you know, WordPress changes. So it's interesting to see how many devs out there are actually using Git these days. I mean, there's a lot, you know.
I guess if you start out on it, like I know a lot of new devs just sort of start with it, and that's probably, you know, the easiest way. Trying to convert is kind of painful. And at least to some degree, Git sort of supports SVN. So like you can package your change sets and then push them to an SVN repository from Git, and that's kind of useful. I know at least some developers use that to push their changes from their GitHub, where they're actually developing the plugin, into our SVN, where they're actually releasing the plugin. A very prominent company that I cannot mention right now because they haven't announced is working on developing a major plugin, and they've been actually working with me on it. And you can probably guess by now, but they're developing it all on GitHub, and they're going to be doing exactly the same thing, pushing their big change to SVN every time they want to make a release. And I gave them a script to do just that. It's very easy to do. But yeah, they're using basically our plugin SVN as a deployment system, which is what it is. It's not really geared towards development as much as it is towards deployment. I mean, I develop on it, but not everybody can do that. So
I can dig it.
You know, going back to what you said quickly, that you dev on Windows, which I think is interesting, because I would love to see a poll of the community members out there that dev on Windows, because I dev on Windows primarily. I have a Mac too. I kind of use both, but I dev primarily during the day on Windows. And we're few and far between, and we're definitely a dying breed. You know, there's people like Trip J. You know, he was all Windows. He's the one that got me on NetBeans, then he switched to Mac. I want to say Alex Viper. I want to say he's Windows. I think he might still be Windows, but there's not many of us. Almost everyone out there that I know of in the WordPress community are Mac developers, or I know some Linux people, but those are even crazier. But it's interesting that you're still on Windows. Any particular reason why? Or that's just what you like, what you're familiar with.
Yeah, I hate OS X.
it's less what you like and more what you despise.
Fair answer.
it really is. It really is what I don't like. I've played with the Mac quite a lot. A friend of mine has one, and He loves it, obviously. I used it quite a bit. I was very disappointed when Matt went and bought a MacBook or the Air. I was so upset for a long time. It was just me and him on Windows, being, you know, those two Mavericks. And now, damn it, he's changed. So, yeah, I don't know. I just don't like using OS X. I don't like the style. I don't like the way the menu bar system works. I don't like just dozens of little things about it. But at the same time, I mostly do my development in a command line Linux system. So, you know, I don't think it's a big deal either way. When I'm developing WordPress.org, I'm doing it through PuTTY connected to a sandbox running whatever that Linux is. Yeah, like Nathan says, I'm the only Audreyite using Windows at this point.
Sorry, what was that? You get Audreyite?
Yeah, I'm the only Audrey person running. So,
I wasn't aware of the Audrey.
I just made that up. That's not something we say. Okay.
Is that the official term? We're Audreyites?
I guess it is now. I just made that up right this second. So, you know.
Yeah. Well, that makes more sense than, because as soon as you said it, just images of you guys referring to each other as Audreyites came to mind. I was like, wait.
Too late. Ryan already made a post about it.
Yeah, it's done now.
Audreyites.
It just slipped out, I guess. I don't know.
That's how those things happen.
I guess it's done.
Yep. Yeah, there's nothing you can do about it now.
Yeah,
well, I'd apologize, but I can't help it. So
it's fine.
That's cool. I mean, it's always. I absolutely love seeing people's dev environments, no matter what you're on. I love seeing what tools people are using and comparing tools and seeing if there's things I can do better or what you're using. You know, so it's always fun whether you're on a Windows or Mac or Linux or whatever it may be, looking at how you dev on a day to day basis and seeing. Because whatever you're using, you have to be using it because you believe it makes you as efficient as you can be. And I think that's what everyone kind of picks a platform they're on. So I always like kind of comparing those. And I always, you know, when I'm sitting with devs that I haven't, you know, maybe met before, I always, and they have their laptop there, I'm like, hey, what are you working on? What do you use, IDE, a text editor, you know, Mac, Windows, what do you have over there? Just to kind of see how they do their work. And it's kind of neat seeing how everyone, you really don't see the same setup twice, you know? Like, I don't think I've ever seen.
Everybody's got their own thing.
Everyone has something a little bit different.
And they use different things for different things. Like when I was doing all Java development several years ago, I used Eclipse, just bare bones with a bunch of add-ons.
Eclipse.
You know, I got to be really efficient at it and really fast. When I switched to doing all PHP work, I went back to my old standby. On Windows, I've used TextPad for about 10 years. It's just a great program that I've always used. And it's got its own weird sort of, you know, key bindings. And it has, you know, the reason I use it is because I know it. And it's got really fast global searching and, you know, just useful little tools that I use all the time. You can sort of customize it if you want to, like, build from it or things like that. I know people that use it with C and they have all build tools integrated in. And I don't use any of that. I just use it as a text editor for editing PHP just because it has really good syntax highlighting and that's all I need.
I'll tell you, Eclipse or any IDE that's been built on off of it in the last 10 years are about as clunky as it gets, man. Not saying that it's not a useful tool. They're just really clunky.
Oh, Eclipse is one of those things.
Of course, I use an IDE.
You have to learn to love Eclipse.
Yep. I agree there, too.
I got used to it. When you're developing Java, you have very few choices. Eclipse was like the one that I was sort of taught on. And I just learned to use it and learned its little eccentricities. And it's very, very good at what it does for being very, very bad IDE. So
I am on OS X, and I am not much of a developer these days. I'll mess around with HTML, CSS, and PHP, some JavaScript, Lite. Coda is where it's working for me, and it does everything I need. It has the built-in tools that I use every day, and I'm looking forward to the release of 2 here in the next couple of days.
Nice. I'll tell you what, though. If you ask any developer that's been doing it for, I don't know, 15 years, they've probably worked with Visual Studio at some point, and they will tell you hands down it is the best IDE. It is amazing. Visual Studio is incredible. It does everything you want it to do and more. If you're developing in the language,
I think that's Yeah, and I think that might go back to part of the problem with Visual Studio and why a lot of people fell off of it. It's just too heavy. Like, it's, it, I mean, the install heavy alone is like, I don't know, it's monstrous. Like, you know, I like IDEs. I love, you know, I have NetBeans, you know, which is most people would think is heavy. It's an IDE. So I like that type of environment, but man, Visual Studio, like, just in the past, like, you know, 10 years has gotten insane.
It's like any Microsoft product. It's gigantic. I mean, you know, they have to have a friggin' DVD just to put Word on, you know? And
there's so much backward support that has to come with it, which I get to. Like, they have to support, you know, so far back, and they've been around for so long. So there's some weight behind that as well, but it's just like the weight behind it is kind of what turned me off. Not, you know, NetBeans is still heavy, but it's not nearly as heavy as Visual Studio.
Oh yeah, but if you're doing any of the .NET stuff or C++ on Windows, I mean, there are free options, but by comparison, they're terrible. And Visual Studio just gets it done, like you can literally build an entire Windows application without writing a line of code, just dragging and dropping stuff. And it's not a bad application. Their wizards are amazing and all this. They make Microsoft, you can give Microsoft a lot of grief, but they make the best developer tools in the world. It's incredible. But it is heavy, but it is incredible.
I'm an OS X guy, but I'll tell you, I started off on Windows. I mean, at network administration stuff years back. By far, the best product I've seen them release in recent history is Windows 7. I think they killed it there, and it's by far one of the superior operating systems, in my opinion. Not to push away OS X. That's what I use on the daily. Pick your flavor of Linux. I'm a fan. But I really kudos to them, and especially when you look at the sheer footprint and how that's supported, I think that Windows 7 just really hits the mark for me.
Oh, I like Windows 7 a lot.
Yep, that's the main reason I can't get off, and I won't get off Windows for now, is I like Windows 7. Now, Windows 8 definitely looks interesting, and from what I've seen, it doesn't look like my cup of tea, but I'm going to wait till I actually try it before I judge it, but... 7 sold me. Vista was, you know, I actually liked Vista, but it had to run on a power horse of a lap, you know, of a computer, a desktop or laptop. It had to be a monster computer to run correctly. But if you had the resources, it was an all right OS. It wasn't as bad as it was made out. It just was so resource intensive that most people didn't have computers that could support it properly. But 7 kind of fixed that. They took the best parts of Vista and then made it very, very fast, which is what I love. So, yeah, I love Windows 7. I think that's the reason I haven't got away from it.
They took the best parts of Vista and cut out all the rest and made it and put all the best parts of XP back in, is what it comes down to. Have you looked at the Windows 8
and
stuff
yet? It's super fast. Like, comes out of sleep in, like, you know, a couple seconds. And, I mean, that's just – I was in love. Yeah, the Windows 8, I've seen some demo videos. I haven't played with any of the whatever versions they released, the betas or whatever. I've only seen the videos online. So it looks weird. I mean, to kind of put it bluntly, it just looks weird, so I'm not sure.
I think Windows 8 is the next Vista.
Could be. Wouldn't surprise me.
I feel like they're focusing so much on tablets and mobile devices, and really, I mean, they made they made who they are based on desktops. And it's, to me, just based on what I've seen, it feels like they might be getting away from that. But again, I'd like to reserve judgment until I've actually played with it.
Well, they're pushing towards touch and mobile and all that. I see where they're going. I just don't think they're going the right way.
They've never done that before. Vista.
We'll see. See what happens. When is that coming out anyways? I have the action pack, so I'll get a copy of it, but I don't even know when it's supposed to come out.
No idea.
Let's see here.
I doubt I'll upgrade to it.
I wish I had time to test stuff like this. Like, I would have downloaded the preview version a while ago, and I just don't have time to, like, install this stuff and play with it. I mean, if I have that kind of time, I need to, you know, I should be updating my plugins and stuff.
Booyah. Where did Ryan go? He got really quiet. Did he fall asleep or?
Oh, sorry. We were talking about Windows 7, 8. I passed out for a second.
I was like, choking on an ice cube? Drinking his whiskey with ice.
I don't know what we're talking
about. No, actually with some stones. as you should.
I think actually Otto yelled at me for that one time.
For using ice or stones?
Oh, you got those whiskey stones in there?
Yes, I do.
Oh, yeah. You're doing it right. Does that work?
Kind of... I always wondered if that works.
Absolutely it works. Why wouldn't it work?
What? I don't know. It's like a stone that makes it cold. That seems kind of weird.
Well, you put them in a freezer. You get the if it's cold and you put it in the drink, it's going to make the drink cold.
I thought you just dropped it in like as. No. I thought you just dropped it in as like a stone,
Brad,
and it would magically make it drink
really,
warm.
Really.
Hey, invented.
I thought they were like
the
magic stones. I'm not the only one that thought that.
The only one that's ever thought that.
All right, Brad, we're going to have to start teaching physics here, okay? So the first law of thermodynamics.
I thought they were like some kind of stones that as soon as they touch whiskey, they get cold. I don't know.
Hey, only a NASA, NASA can use those legally.
Brad, I really hope you're drunk right now. No, that's...
I'll stick to ice cube, my friend.
Drink more, Brad, please.
I'll stick to ice cubes.
Okay, so there was a...
I thought...
Fair enough.
What's that?
There was a bar in Nashville.
I've heard this one. It's with the priest, right?
That had the specialized ice for each drink. What was the name of the bar? Ryan, were you there?
Sorry, say it again.
The bar in Nashville that we went to. Yeah, that had the specialized ice priest drink.
Oh right. Oh. Specialized drink. I know they had the special, like, carvings of ice, but I don't know if this is the same. The crap. Hold on, I mentioned.
Well, for whiskey, what they did is they had the single sphere of ice.
Right. So yeah.
The sphere reduces the surface area, and so you didn't get as much water in your drink. I forgot what I ordered. It was a gin drink, but it came in a high glass, and it had a single column, like a cylinder of ice, right in the middle.
Yes. Yeah, that was that the Patterson House.
Yeah, Patterson House. That was it.
Coolest bar.
Oh, it was great.
I mean,
you're going to pay $12 per drink, but yeah, it was great.
Yeah, just everything in there is going to cost $12, but it's going to be unbelievable. And the food was really good, too, which I was surprised by.
Yeah, the food was really good.
Normally, you kind of get one or the other, particularly for specialty places, and it's good stuff.
What's the same? But
anyway, I looked up Patterson House when I got...
What happened?
Back and read about them on their on Nashville news site or whatever, and they talked on this news thing about the different drinks and how they were going towards the sort of that speakeasy vibe kind of thing, and that was very cool. I just thought that was really interesting. But they have literally like six kinds of ice for each glass, specific
to
glass.
That's really cool.
And I thought it was very clever.
Ah, scotch.
Back to the magic rocks.
Bourbon.
So I dropped a few potential show titles into the chat.
I think Aaron Campbell just trumped them all with Brad and his magic stones.
See, I think, well, okay, that's obviously a good children's book title. That would be a good children's book, but we said that...
I'm not showing any kids my magic stones, my friend.
That went from hilarious to creepy real freaking quick, man.
With the very pedal bearish.
But we said that during the after show.
Yeah, fair enough. Fair.
So we have Gobbledygook, Non-Douchey eBooks, wow. I Have Nason, and Accelerant. Also a variant of the I Have Nason, which is I Don't Commit to Core.
You misspelled Accelerant. Hang on,
I believe it because I was taking notes. So
there you go.
Yeah, that's better. Thanks.
I think I misspelled it too.
Has Gobbledygook been like a show title before?
It hasn't. It's been said before.
No, it's been said before.
This is actually so I did a bad job of paying attention to funny things.
Dre
said it. But actually I think this week each one of us is represented in a potential show title. So there you go. I think that's the first
what's
time
mine?
Ever.
I didn't say any of those. Where's my show? Oh, my magic stones?
Oh yeah, I guess you're not. But you always have the show titles. You don't need one.
Because I'm the biggest dumbass on the show.
We're always embarrassing you with using your show.
Please, have at it.
Accelerant.
As in someone who gets things done or someone who lights other things on fire.
Fire! Power. Well, do we have? I guess it's. It sounds like it's either
Pony.
So much hate.
Shut up.
Big I don't like any of those titles, actually.
Yeah, they're not great.
Just put a bunch of underscores.
title not complete.
There you go. That's what you should call it.
Episode number 10, we just weren't funny enough. We apologize.
We suck.
Did not bring the humor on this one. See, that's the thing, because, I mean, unless I write it down in the moment, we can, like, I can try to, you can try to remember what was said, but you're always going to mutate it. It's always going to change.
I have no idea what we said.
I don't, yeah. Well, yeah. After it's said, it seems like people tend to like I don't commit to core.
I don't commit to more.
Core.
I don't commit to core.
I don't commit to magic stones.
Bradley needs new sound effects. Oh boy! I really wanted to actually get some auto sounds from The Simpsons before the show, and I totally failed. But it would have been funny and topical.
Topical. Topical.
Topical. Yeah.
Sure. Yeah. Why not?
Yeah, I go with that.
Every day I'm shuffling.
Oh, and then it all breaks down.
Yeah. Then it all falls apart. Hey, Bart, dude, get on the boat.
I mean, you would think you would have learned after making J-Trip -4J last week. See, he's not even here this week. That's how bad. That's how terrible you were. Out. Just saying.
I didn't say that last week, did I? Somebody else said that.
Yeah. Well, it wasn't you, but I think you
that might even come from the chat room, didn't it?
Oh, probably. The chat room's way funnier than we are.
They are.
Hi there. I'm Drew Armada.
You're a dick. Oh, boy.
That's what I play every time I answer the phone.
Wow, man. Oh, so have you done any A-B testing to see how it's affecting your conversions?
Yeah, it's increased our conversions 100%.
That's good times.
Just in your sexy voice opener. Hi there, I'm Drew Armada, and I recommend WDS. For all your WordPress needs.
Hey, so this was episode 10. That's a big milestone.
Mm-hmm.
Surprised we made it.
Amazed you kept it together this long.
I know, right?
Yeah.
Had a lot of doubt.
Just saying, it won't last much longer. That's for sure.
Hey, now you got something you got to tell us, there, Ryan?
Yeah, I'm just saying. It can't possibly last much longer.
Hey, Otto, I hear there's a spot opening up on WP Late Night if you're interested in being a regular.
There you go.
So I guess we're cutting out Ryan then. Apparently, is that how it's going?
Mm-hmm. Apparently, he's leaving.
I guess.
I'll just silently manage the soundboard.
You have to be bad at segues and hate every idea that I have, and then you'll.
Now that's not true, Brad. I really like your magic stones. That idea has been solid.
On that note, I need to go drain the ping pong. I'll be right back.
I'm already ahead of the game because I hate the magic stones. They're terrible. They don't hold the cold in.
No, they don't. No matter what, no matter what spells or incantations you whisper above them, they don't just produce cold. I guess, which is what.
Assumed they touch whiskey and they get cold.
I'm gonna have to.
We're far fetched.
I'm gonna send you some proper whiskey stones, Brad, and with don't worry, with detailed explanation written up.
Magic stones.
See, that's the thing. I'll take them out because they actually do come in like one of those little bags, right? That's what you actually put them in. So I'll just send you the pouch with the, and I'll label it. I'll just say Brad. It'll be, you'll know it's me because it's gonna be an envelope, manila envelope, and there's just gonna be a note. There's gonna be no return address. And say, Brad, these are magic stones.
Backyard and a magic beanstalk.
These are magic stones.
Okay, I gotta say something to Ryan in chat here. He's just talking about liquid nitrogen. I had the weirdest conversation on Sunday. Nathan was there. He can back me up. Matt and me and Nason were sitting at brunch talking to these three extreme chefs, I would say, and they were saying everybody should be cooking with liquid nitrogen. Liquid nitrogen is like the greatest thing. They're looking forward to the day when every cone comes equipped with a liquid nitrogen faucet.
Huh.
And I sat there like listening and couldn't figure out what they were talking about. And they were explaining how they would cook with liquid nitrogen and then add heat and sear and things like that. So that's a thing. People use that liquid nitrogen in weird, interesting cooking ways. And yeah, that was one of the weirder conversations I had this weekend about barbecue, was using liquid nitrogen to cook steaks, essentially.
Is that what the stones are made out of? No, I guess not, since everyone's laughing.
Nope. That's not right. I want this to be a safe place for you, Brett. I don't want you to not be able to ask your questions.
Well, just everybody laughs at me if I ask a question. So obviously you don't want me to ask a question.
I know. I apologize. I'm a jerk. And all of the other just dozens of people laughing at you, they're jerks too. And I just want to reiterate that there are lots of people probably laughing at you. But yeah, so I'm going to send you the magic stones. You obviously, take them straight out of the bag, put them in your mouth, pour the alcohol in, just swish it around. Yep. You obviously swallow the stones whole, so I'll send you new ones.
Excuse me, I don't know how magic whiskey stones work.
Oh, that's pretty good. Yeah, you're right. The stones. Sorry, Aaron. I didn't mean it, but I really did mean it. Yeah, you have to have a backup set of stones, because I mean it can get through.
I've got a backup set of stones, my friend.
you have to have four stones cold at any one time. That way you can get by with one. I mean, it just depends how much you want your drink chilled.
What is the point? Why is it better than ice? Because it doesn't water it down.
Yes.
Mm. I like exactly my whiskey with a little bit of water in it.
Yeah, a shot of water is not. I mean, that'll bring out the flavor. I mean, that's not a bad thing. But I mean, ice will water it. Ice will make it more watered down over time, right? Yes. So a shot of water to kind of activate the flavor, that's totally fine. But
sounds like to me you're not drinking it quite fast enough. It's just me though.
Fair enough.
Holy. Hey, Otto.
Yeah.
Yeah, these Bud Lights don't get any better, man.
Oh, Christ.
Yeah, they don't give you a buzz. They give you a headache instantly. It's good times.
See, the problem with Bud Light is the taste. Not that I'm discounting Budweiser as a brand. Just make awful, awful beer. You got to migrate on up to the PBR, man. I'm telling you.
I'm doing it. Or the old style.
You
know, Bud Light Platinum's a step in the right direction. I think that's pretty good.
It's kind of sweet. I think that's the higher alcohol level, but I think it's just a little sweet.
For which one? For what?
I'm just kidding.
The Bud Platinum.
Oh, yeah. The taste isn't too much different.
Yeah, the problem with Bud Light is that it's crap.
It's definitely strong. I mean, you can tell it's stronger when you sip it. I mean, it's, 3% stronger or close to it? 2.5, something like that?
I think the Platinum is like 5.5.
I thought it was like 7.
Oh, is it 7? It may be.
It's much higher. I could be wrong. I thought it was like 6.5 or 7.
I mean, don't get me wrong. After I've had a few good beers, I'm okay with a Miller Lite. But Bud Light, man, it's not my taste.
It's one of the beers. One of the beauties of Philly, it's a huge craft beer town. So you can, if you like craft beer, everywhere you go has it, which is great.
That's a lot like North Carolina, then, pretty much.
Yeah, it's nice. Like I grew up in Indiana. In Indiana, Indianapolis, it's just the domestic crap. That's it. Like there's one or two breweries, In Philly, there's like 60 breweries, within, 20 miles. It's ridiculous.
Wow.
So there's just stuff everywhere. I mean, it's awesome.
Wow. I got to go to Philly, apparently.
Hey, coming up.
Yeah, we've only got a couple of local breweries here.
breweries. Portland's got a lot too.
Yeah, I don't like any of those.
The thing.
Is that right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, unfortunately, in Memphis, we don't actually have a lot of microbreweries. We've got Ghost River, and I love Ghost River, but it's a very small brewery. I don't know. North Carolina is where I saw the most. The most breweries, like Asheville's got like 10, 15 different breweries. And French Broad was amazing, you know, things like that. Raleigh, Durham, all that area. When I drove over there, I just sort of went on a brewery tour. Had a great time.
Yeah, that's they always have a good work camp, too. I heard they might be doing it in the fall because they usually do it in the spring.
I would actually prefer it in the fall.
Yeah, it sounds like they might do in the fall, but I haven't heard anything official yet. But that's what they were talking about.
Yeah, I might go to Raleigh. I think that'd be a lot of fun.
It's a good one. They always put on a good show. It's like 2 days. There's what's the barbecue place? The Pit down there is awesome. It's good North Carolina barbecue. So it's always a fun one to go to. And that town is like all about drinking. You can just walk around all over the place with beer in your hand. Nobody cares.
Same thing in Savannah or, Beale Street.
Savannah, Georgia.
Savannah is one of the few places I would live other than Memphis.
Blows out your mouth like molasses.
What the hell?
Isn't that right, Savannah? Savannah, Georgia.
Yeah, no, that's not it at all.
Not even close, but that's cool.
I don't know. I'm pretty sure that's like Norway.
Oh shit!
Country.
So what's up with you, Otto? Are you going to be making any new cool stuff on your own here? Any new plugins, or just supporting your awesomeness that you already have up online?
Well, like I said, I'm working on a plugin that I can't talk about.
Well, no, we don't need no trade secrets and craziness here.
I don't have any plans. I don't have any plans to do anything with my plugins in particular right now. I'm mostly working on finishing up the changes that we made on the plugin directory. Like, for example, I still got to add email support, email subscriptions to the support thing. And, you know, a few other minor. I want to get that API working.
Yeah.
That's like my immediate goals. After that, you know, I don't know. With 3.4 coming out, I'm going to have to be starting to make changes to the theme check, because every release we've got to update theme check.
Mm-hmm.
Which is actually kind of funny. Theme check is, out of all the stuff I've done, theme check is probably the one that's most well received. Even though everybody, you know, sort of hates it, they're like, at least it helped me, you know, get better. So that's kind of cool.
Theme check's awesome, dude.
When we're doing themes for clients, I always tell my guys, when you think it's ready, run it through theme check, and I guarantee you it's not. And then every time it finds something they overlooked.
Yeah,
Pross did a number with that. I didn't even write any of those checks. That was all Simon Prosser. And all I did was give them sort of a framework. I'm like, here you go. Here's a couple of checks. Go nuts. I find the easiest way to make, you know, really awesome plugins is to trick other people into writing them for me.
Nathan, excuse me.
Yeah. The theme check is one of the ones I think everybody just loves it because it tells them what they're doing wrong, but they hate it because we actually use it on WordPress.org and they can't upload a theme if they don't pass it. So that's kind of fun. So it's sort of a love-hate thing there, but we got to update that here soon. My simple Facebook Connect plugin is broken in very important and meaningful ways. The Twitter plugin needs a massive update. The big thing I'm going to look at like in the next week is the Blogger importer. This guy named Andy at Ace Anime. I don't know his last name. He's been sending me updates for the importer for the best part of a month now, and I've just been so busy that I haven't been able to get to him. But I want to get that working and happy before 3.4. And from what I've looked at briefly, it's amazing. He's fixed it really well. And it does Blogger importing great. So,
wait, Blogger the import that you have to authorize and connect to, and then it does the import?
Yeah, but you have to do that with all of them now.
That import needs help. So I hope that's worth it. Because doing it, like, as a company, we're importing clients' Blogger sites, and then we have to, like, authorize our development domain onto Blogger. I mean, it's a total mess. So, I mean, I completely go around that because I think, if I remember right, .com has the Blogger XML uploader.
Yeah, the challenge there, depending on your environment, is the size of the actual import, right?
Not anymore.
But Blogger's a file import currently, right? It's only the...
Blogger is not a file importer. Blogger...
Explain, Otto. Give us your wisdom, my friend.
Okay. So the way the Blogger importer worked was it would connect to Google via their API, and it would import directly. I rewrote parts of it to the method that it connected was old, and they stopped supporting it, and it's sort of half broken. I changed it to use all the new Google OAuth stuff, and I changed the XML parsing because they spit it out in XML. I changed that to use the built-in XML classes now that we're PHP 5. But I never actually pushed it into the plugin. I sort of put it in a branch because it only half worked. It was sort of something I was working on. I sort of ran out of time and never finished it. And people took it and started working on it. And this Andy guy has done a massive amount of work on it.
That's awesome.
And he keeps sending me zips of it, and I just don't have the time. I'm going to make the time and get that done before 3.4 because from everybody I'm seeing, it just works phenomenally well. Now it uses the new Google OAuth stuff. So, like, you do have to click a button to authenticate, but it goes to the Google screen where you see, like, you know, just the do you want to allow, you know, this site to access your stuff? And you hit yes, that's fine. And then it uses some kind of mechanism to import. And the thing is, for the problem with importing via PHP is you have a lot of timeout issues. So, like, normally PHP times out in 30 seconds, which is not long enough to pull in, you know, all that stuff.
Sure.
So for the Tumblr, I wrote sort of a cron based system to do it for Tumblr, and it's sort of half working. I'm gonna fix that up, try to migrate it to the Blogger importer, and get that out. And I want to do it this week. And if I don't have it this week, then I'll have it next week. I have to do it. It's just something that's very top of my list to do. So it will happen just as soon as
I'm excited for that because the current process is...
It's a challenge, man.
I clearly have a .com blog set up just for Blogger imports. And I took everything out. I import Blogger with the file into .com because that piece isn't available on .org. And then export it again and then bring it in as WordPress import, you know, which is ridiculous. Yeah, it works. They're doing that, you know.
Right, and that's just a kind of a, you know, terrible, terrible way to do it. There's a ticket. Let me find it here. Here it is. Pretty sure this is it. Look at the latest post on, I'll post it in chat here. Look at the latest post on this. And he uploaded a zip of his importer. And he's actually sent me a few updates to it since he posted that. But it's pretty good. It does a lot faster, a lot better, and more efficiently, but it does require, you know, a modern WordPress install, like a PHP 5 and all that jazz.
Which we should all be running updated stuff, shouldn't we?
Right. So if you're going to do a Blogger import, I would recommend trying this first on your live site, and it goes directly from your site, from Blogger to your site, as opposed to going through like a WordPress.com blog or something. And it's very cool. It's got changes from a lot of different people, Ryan included, and It's very nice. I like it.
Well, kudos to Ryan and Andy here, Workshop Shed. I'm definitely interested to see it. I think this is going to be a lifesaver for a lot of people, a time saver at minimum, right? So good stuff.
But I'm going to push it into the official plugin as soon as I test it a few times and make sure everything's kosher. And we'll get it out there, get it working. Because I'd rather meet people using that than trying to go through WordPress.com. It's that's a several-step process, and it's kind of a pain.
But, you know, a path of least resistance, right? So Brad's found something that actually works. It might not be the most efficient thing because there isn't, you know, it's a compensating control. It'll get the job done for now. So whatever works.
I'm only wasting resources on .com. But if you just go look at all the blog posts centered around that importer, and that's basically what everybody is doing because that's what works the best and the most, you know, and most of the time, like doing the other, I had so many problems with the other method. It was pretty much unusable. Like you said, it's pretty much broke.
Yeah. So, yeah. The existing one doesn't work very well, if at all. So this one does work for the people who have tested it. I need to test it before I can be sure. And then I'll push it in there and get it in the official version. And then it'll be available to everybody.
I think you had to authorize the domain on the user's Google account or something. So I had to like authorize our dev domain on the user's Google account for them to even be allowed to import that stuff. And it still didn't work. Like it was, and I wasn't comfortable doing it anyways, you know, so it was really weird.
Yeah. OAuth is kind of a pain, but Google gave us sort of a way around it. It makes it look a little shady. So like when you get the pop-up screen, it says, hey, this may not be trustworthy. Because it's using sort of a generic login mechanism.
What is it that it's using there?
It's a little weird. I'd have to look at it to be 100% sure, but let me pull it up here.
I'd be interested to learn a little bit about that piece. And we can do that offline, Otto, if it makes more sense.
Yeah, basically, Google has very strange APIs.
Sure. Oh, yeah. Trust me, I know this.
The way they've implemented OAuth is, the thing is, if you do OAuth right, you sort of have to pre-authorize what you do. And like, it's the same if you set up like my Facebook or Twitter plugin, you have to go and create an application on Facebook or an application on Twitter. On Google, if you do it, like I have my simple Google Connect plugin, I make you do that as well. And they call it a project. And that's sort of a step that is kind of a pain that you don't have to take for Google for something as simple as this. So the way it actually works is to use a generic username and password that is sort of pre-authorized for everything, but it gives you a warning. And it's meant for sort of local usage. And yeah, that makes it a little strange. So
I'd love the deets on that, man, if you get a chance.
Yeah, I can send you whatever the information is. But it is very weird the way that they do the halfway OAuth, because you're giving it access, but it's a one-time access, and it's only it's meant for testing, so it tells you, hey, this may not be, you know, kosher.
Legit, for sure.
But if you hit okay, then it works anyway. And it's just the only way to do it without actually setting up a project for your domain so that it can authenticate as your domain. It's kind of crazy a little bit. So
Good times, man.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It uses the username and password of Anonymous. That's what it is. So
perfect. Anytime you can use an anonymous password, credentials, I'm in.
Right.
It's good.
Yeah.
Good times.
So it comes back and tells you, hey, you know, are you sure about this? But it works if you hit okay, but it sort of only works for about, you know, an hour. And that's their sort of security mechanism around it.
Yeah, I'm not really sure, but I get the green light every time I click, so I'm in.
Right. Yeah. So I don't know. It's very, very strange. But if you go through the effort and set up a project and all that, then you can sort of retain a token that works every time.
Sure.
But that's like a little bit far to go just to import a blog, you know? So the anonymous method works well enough for this one-time use.
Well, yeah. I mean, think about
generally importing is a one-time thing, right?
Well, so, you would hope if it's done correctly, you should have everything in one swipe, right?
Oh, exactly. Yeah.
Dude, when's the next barbecue? I want to go.
Oh, for MFCMA?
How awesome was it, by the way?
Yeah. That was pretty awesome. I had a great time. Everybody had a great time. We didn't really do well in barbecue, but it's our first year with a new chef, so we did not place as high as we wanted to. But still, great time. We got third for the booth. And if I saw the video.
That was crazy.
Yeah, if you saw that video from Matt, yeah, that won third. And we were robbed. We should have won first. We were robbed. So I saw the first place booth, and it was nowhere near as cool.
Wow!
I
mean, so you're telling me there's politics in barbecue?
Was it a Ferris wheel? Like what booth could have won? Because I saw like I guess, obviously I haven't been to barbecue events that rival this one that you attend in Memphis. Like I don't know, but watching the video of that thing going up, it was like. Really? Like this is the? It seemed like such a. I mean, they built us a building in like 2 days.
That's what we built in order to have a bar to drink at for 3 days.
Ah.
So yeah.
It's kind of awesome.
It was a lot of fun, and the tent was amazing. They had a sort of a rooftop upstairs to do all that stuff with.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to be posting a bunch of pictures to our website. Our website is moodyqs.com, and it was a heck of a time. I put it this way, I had so much fun I kind of blew out my voice here. So
yeah, you know, it didn't you didn't really sound too bad during the show, so I didn't even think about it except for at the beginning after you told us. So I was like, oh, I'll have to listen. Turned out just fine.
Oh, well, good. I'm glad to hear that, because I sound like crap in person.
We'll have to have a barbecue cook-off one of these days. That's some barbecue that actually, Dre and Ryan, you guys both had it, didn't you?
I believe so.
Yep. Yeah, I might have to have a little WP BBQ cook-off.
Oh, yeah. I got to say, I'm not the chef. I'm the taster. So we actually had a local restaurant, Double J Saloon, provide us with all the cooking equipment and the chef. And everything else, they did all of the cooking for us, so that was really nice of them.
So the real kicker will be at the point where there are multiple WordPress teams in Memphis competing against one another. That's when you know
that will be interesting.
That's when you know that WordPress and barbecue have arrived in Memphis.
But it was pretty impressive. We all my friends, which you know, sort of run this barbecue team, is you know me and 37 of my closest friends. They were very impressed with the amount of name recognition that the WordPress sign gathered. Because Brent made us a handmade wooden WordPress sign. And he put it on front, like, first thing while they were building. And everybody during the build was stopping by and saying, whoa, are you guys like the WordPress team? And they're like, no, the WordPress, I mean, yes, but the WordPress guys, they're not here right now. Mm-hmm. They're like, oh, well, who else is going to be here? And they're going to be like, and they were saying, like, oh, you know, my friend Otto works for WordPress, and he would get like halfway through that sentence, and they're like, wait, you know Otto? Nice. And I'm like, because my friends don't really understand this. To me, to them, I'm just a guy that drinks with them at the bar.
Right. They're like, no, it's got to be a different, I'm sure it's a different Otto.
Right. they now understand, like, dude, you are huge on the internet. I'm like, I told you, you know.
You need that shirt. I'm a big deal on the internet.
Kind of a big deal. No, you got
the internet.
What's the? No, you need to get the shirt since you got the Pressnomics invite. You can say you're one of the top 72 people in WordPress.
Oh, there you go. Yeah.
I've already got the top three most important people.
Yeah, I guess top 72. Then at that point, that's not that big a deal. But
that's still pretty good considering 70 plus million people run WordPress.
Sure,
it's doing all right.
But then my friends would say, "Oh yeah, I know Otto," and then. He's invited some of his WordPress friends down. They're going to have, Nason and Matt. And they're like, holy shit, Nason and Matt are going to be here? And, they just sort of took it and ran with it. And they just kept coming up to us and, like, seriously impressed. Like, dude, like, 30 people stopped by this morning asking about you. Like, when are you going to come down? And we're like, dude, we were working, you know.
We were waiting
for the cooking to start.
Yeah, probably not interested in helping to build the building.
Exactly.
Just the barbecue that comes out of it.
I ain't interested in working. I'm interested in eating. So, you know.
Delicious.
it was a lot of fun. Had a great time. Sort of destroyed my body for the last couple of days. So
kind of making me a little bit hungry for barbecue.
Yeah. Yeah,
barbecue in a while.
Mason and Scott both took home Tupperware containers full of barbecue.
Hey, nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, I was like, I didn't know you could get that on a plate.
Crack it open right when you take off. Everyone would be real jealous of you.
I'm sure it was gone pretty fast.
Honestly, I'm pretty certain they could get it on a plate in Memphis the day after Barbecue Fest. So yeah,
the whole airport probably smelled like barbecue.
That whole airport always smells like barbecue. There's three barbecue joints in the airport.
Nice. I live in a barbecue pit. It's delicious.
All right, guys, I've got to drop off.
Liar.
It's a really fun show, man. Awesome. Definitely need to have you back soon.
Sure, yes, sir.
It's a lot of fun. So hopefully I'll see you in New York, but if you don't make it there, I'm sure our paths will cross at a WordCamp eventually.
Yeah, I'm going, like I said, to probably three or four in the next few months. So
I'm sure we'll see each other out. So great show, guys. I'm anxious to catch on the replay tomorrow.
Cheers, Brad. Cool.
All right. See you guys.
Have a good one, bud. What is your next camp?
If I may ask.
Yeah.
I'm going to WordCamp, Kansas City, Fayetteville, San Francisco, and Chicago.
Booyah.
So that's the four I know of.
Sure enough. I think I may be at Chicago. Frisco, San Francisco, of course.
Yeah, definitely going to be at San Francisco. That's sort of a job requirement.
I don't know why.
Yeah, I have no idea. Yeah. Kansas City, they asked me to speak, and I wanted to do that. So I'm going to talk about I'm going to do sort of a combo, ask me anything, and talk about the support forums.
Oh, sweet.
I have no
idea. Speaking of barbecue, Kansas City is pretty popular there in that world as well.
Yeah, it is. Last year I went there, and I forget the name. It was Jack Stack or something like that. I can't remember the name. It was a very popular place. But it was all like brisket, which I was kind of surprised by. Ooh. So not that I dislike brisket. I was just, I always think barbecue, I think pork. It's very much a pork thing here in Memphis.
Yeah, ribs.
Yeah. It's I'm all about the pulled pork shoulder.
Ooh, that's yummy.
Love me some pulled pork.
You guys are killing me.
I haven't eaten.
It's painful.
Sounds delicious.
I felt bad for sending this link to Nason and Scott, but I'm like, you can't order the best barbecue, in my opinion, in Memphis, right at this URL, and I send them the link. That, and it's Central Barbecue. And that is some good barbecue. That's what all the locals will tell you is the best barbecue.
What I really like about this whole thread in IRC is that one, you've got Ryan posting Audrey jobs, and then the next link by Otto is a barbecue link. This is just brilliant.
Nice.
And those do look damn brilliant. Those Central Barbecue ribs just look ridiculous. Oh my gosh.
I would say not the ribs. The pulled pork is probably that best deal there. The combination's all right.
It may be, brother. I'm just going off the first look, and those things look damn tasty.
They do make very good ribs. They're not the best ribs in Memphis, but they are very high on there.
Mm.
I'm kind of torn as to best ribs.
I don't know. I'll rock some of that pulled pork, too, man. It looks awesome.
That is definitely the best pulled pork in this part of the state, I guarantee you.
Yeah, see, this is bad. I'm hungry. Not cool.
Hey, if I can give them some more money so that they'll open a location closer to me, I'm okay with that.
Yeah. Hell yeah, man.
Which they are actually doing. They're opening a store about three blocks from where I'm sitting. So
that's a win.
When am I cruising out? Oh, yeah.
Gosh.
I'm pretty sure when they open, I'm going to gain a ton of weight.
You don't gain weight. Get the hell out of here.
Well, after they open a barbecue joint three blocks away from me.
Andrew,
When are you coming on WP Late Night, Andrew?
Yeah, I don't know if he's listening or watching the chat room now, but we do have to
grab He's talking about pulled pork, so
he's somewhere.
I did take Nathan to Central last year, and we were sitting there. And last year the park flooded, so they actually had the barbecue competition out sort of east in the middle of in sort of midtown Memphis, in this big sort of stadium parking lot. And on the way, I took him to Central, and we're sitting in Central, and he gets about halfway through his sandwich. He's like, "I haven't even gone to the barbecue competition yet, and I've already had the best barbecue I've ever had in my life." He just goes back to devouring this massive pulled pork sandwich. And yeah, they have amazing pulled pork. It's just wonderful. And they have great, great sauce too. So not that it needs any sauce. It's just juicy and wonderful.
All right. This is baloney, man. You need to stop. This is so wrong. I want to go eat barbecue. Damn it. Let's go. Let's go right now, Otto.
I'm actually thinking about it. I'm like, Double J still open. I could go over there.
I need barbecue. Dang it. Although I had some pretty good ribs here, locally, small joint. But we're talking Southern California, just saying.
Yeah. Nathan in the chat room selling that cue.
Hey, Nathan, I love you. You know that, but you're a dick. I love you to death, but you're just a jerk. let's go, dude. Hey, I'm buying. When are we going? And then the uncomfortable silence settles into the room. It's good times. Oh, man.
Wow. So
that was a good show. I had a good time. I'm glad you came on board, Otto. Heck, I hadn't talked to you in quite a while, man. What's that?
Yeah, like I said, anytime, man.
Definitely.
Well, we'd love to have you back for sure. I think it makes a lot of sense. You fit right in a couple beverages while we're yapping it up, so it's a good thing.
Oh yeah, you know, because I didn't think I would fit in a show where I'm supposed to drink beer and talk about WordPress.
Yeah. Right.
It really is odd that you weren't involved from the show with the show from the very beginning.
I know. Why are you not the fourth like regular host? I don't get it.
It's true. Yeah, I think our after show is just about clocking in at longer than the show it's proceeding.
Nicely done.
that's a first, a WP Candy first. So well, kudos.
What can you do?
Awesome. Well, still have quite a few people hanging out in the chat.
Yeah, that's why we're
still why we're still hanging out.
So if anybody actually has any WordPress related questions, that would be the time.
You know? I have a selfish question, and I pinged Nathan about this the other day, but you know you guys were at barbecue, I understand. So my selfish question, I mentioned finding that the Better Internal Link plugin. Which isn't so much better. It's more just different, you know, the different way to use it. And my question is why by default can I not search for and link to like category and tag or just taxonomy archives from the link manager?
I mean, I wasn't involved with that particular patch. Or that ticket.
And I guess the next question would be, I guess it wouldn't be that hard to add those in there. It's just part of it is that there are so few plugins dealing with. I tend to pick up a lot of my sort of tips and tricks from plugins that other people make, modifying things here and there. And that's sort of how I kind of, you know,
well, obviously learn what it's I can, pluggable because I mean, the plugin is plugging it, right? It just sort of fits in the same spot.
Mm-hmm.
So putting that obviously into core wouldn't be difficult. I guess there's just not a lot of traction for it, or at least I don't know of any tickets offhand that are asking for it.
It's funny because it's such a difficult and it's not, I don't think it's something that probably shows up on that many people's radars because you have to be using it a lot, I think, to run up against any sort of things you want tweak to it. But it's one of those impossible things to search for plugins about because nobody you know, it's the internal link manager or internal links, I guess.
Right.
But that is an un-Googleable term, particularly when you attach WordPress and plugins to it.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. That does seem to me like a I don't use internal links, or at least that feature on my own stuff. I mean, even though I do a lot of internal linking when I write about stuff, I know my links. I don't need them. You know, I know what mm-hmm. they are. Mm-hmm. I've only got like 80 posts on that blog.
So. Right.
But you know, it's okay. A lot of the user experience on WordPress is always geared towards pretty simple. Mm-hmm. And if you present people with a lot of different options, then it gets confusing.
Right.
Less options, better. But I don't even think it's that. I just think a lot of people like the sort of Ajax-y search thing where you type in a phrase.
Oh, it's great. Yeah. I love that, too. I guess I just need to play around with that plugin I found and look at the core code a little bit more to add taxonomies to that list. Because yeah, custom post types, as long as they're public, those are in there by default.
Right. I don't know off the top of my head. I think that whole thing is pluggable, but it probably doesn't have like, you know, searching for specific tag links or specific category links.
That's what I was, Nathan kind of said that in the chat. He said working tags categories into that wouldn't be much fun, unfortunately. That's kind of what I expected, which is why I haven't dug into it much.
Well, the problem is that, there's not like a big list of permalinks to search mm-hmm. on, you know. You'd have to sort of search categories, then search tags, then build links and do the matching and... There's a lot of work there because all the permalinks are built on the fly.
Right.
You could do exact matching like Nathan's talking about, or partial exact matching. A like match would probably be pretty convenient.
Yeah.
Term matching. You could do stuff like that. I'm not sure what would be best there because, like I said, I don't use it, so I don't know.
But yeah, it would be. I mean,
you clearly use it a lot, so you're in a better position to know than I am what would be better.
So yeah, I think it would definitely make for an interesting plugin. Just because, I mean, in my case, I use a lot of taxonomies, and so I try to link to them as much as I can. But what'll hold me back from it is it's not as easy to link to them as it is to link to, you know, posts and pages.
Right.
A lot of times whether it's talking about an event, you know, that's a taxonomy on the site that I could link to. An event that happened or a person, you know, posts about that person and stuff like that. So that's just one of those things that I've been.
You could probably make that somewhat generic across terms because there is a get term link, which I think both get category and get tag link refer to, or something similar to that. So there's probably a way to get terms for, or get a link for any given term. But again, like he's saying here, it's one of those things where the people who use it more often are going to know better. But it's not something I think that's going to be a very general case.
Right.
It's going to get noticed by a lot of the core developers and the core contributors.
Yeah.
Because, like I say, you know, there's only 120 odd core contributors.
Sure.
And they're not all going to be using that particular field or aspect of it.
Right.
At all.
And
time.
I mean, and it's a rare use case. It's a selfish question. It's just something I've been thinking about every now and then.
Even then, it's, you know, I know the core team tries very hard to think for everybody, but it's a little difficult to do that when they're not using it themselves.
Right.
It's something I would have never thought of because I don't use it.
Yeah, that's why I was curious because I know that, you know, there's usually an answer as to why for those sorts of things, I'm always curious not so much to say, well, why isn't that in there, because that should be, but more so what's the thought process and you know, obviously since it serves a smaller group of people and it's a little more difficult to do than searching posts and pages, I think, or content types, I guess. That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, a lot of those smaller features like that are sort of geared towards the people that were building them at the time. And it gets rethought and rethought and rethought. But in the end, you end up with what is generally, I think, the simplest, easiest use case that will fit the most people. Mm-hmm. And the people that actually end up using it the most then tend to be the sort of the smaller use cases. And which want a little more flexibility. And so maybe there's probably room for improvement, don't get me wrong. Mm-hmm. But whether that's a UI improvement or whether that's a what it searches improvement or how it works improvement or something like that.
Right.
It's just a matter of, you know, you put it in and then you iterate on it until it fits the best case. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of that's up for iteration. And I know smaller patches that just sort of change a feature in a minor way tend to get in a lot more often than you would think.
Mm-hmm.
Especially in, you know, larger releases like 3.4. 3.4 has got some major, you know, like 8-9 major features, but it's probably got like 200 tiny features, you know?
Right.
And yeah, those smaller minor adjustments tend to be the smaller tickets that nobody ever looks at, but eventually, you know, after, you know, a year or two, they get in.
Mm-hmm.
After it's iterated over for a while, and once traction builds and people think that's a great idea, why don't we have that in there? You know, stuff like that. I know for a fact, I think I put a patch in one time and it was 4 years before it got in there.
Yeah. I think, somebody on Twitter linked to, what was it? Oh, there's a patch to improve the human time difference function. And, that's been there for a few years as well. But, I mean, you know, and I'm sure, I see in the chat. Absolutely, patches. And I honestly, I should have prefaced it before asking the questions, but I don't think it's something that most people need. It's definitely a plug-in territory for my use case.
I'm not sure about that. It might not be plug-in territory. Maybe it's something that could be done in a small patch just to improve the existing search or existing interface a little bit. Mm-hmm. Tiny patches are better. You know,
right.
Things just change. Maybe add one extra search or one extra way of doing things that sort of expand the reach of an existing feature. I think those are great, you know, to put in patches or even put in a ticket for or find an existing ticket and put in a patch for.
Mm-hmm.
Stuff like that tends to get in a lot easier, smoother, because it is a minor use case, and if it improves the way it works,
right.
It's, you know, if it doesn't really break anything, it's a lot better, you know.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I think if it did, if there was an elegant way to rope in just categories and tags for most people, I think that could probably be interesting. I mean, and useful for them, particularly if there was a way to, you know, similar to how it works now, where, and I'm not sure exactly what setting it is, whether it's public or, you know, what is it, appears in searches or whatever the register post type.
It's probably public, yeah.
Probably public that you know loops it into that as well. Something that kind of behave the same way with taxonomies, I think, would be kind of cool just for adding new ones. Because some people, I mean, granted, there's not everybody or very few people, I guess, add custom taxonomies, but some people get crazy with it, like me.
Well, I mean, if you made it even more generic, like just we're searching for terms, so it got tags and categories, but also got custom taxonomies.
Mm-hmm.
I think that would be a pretty decent little patch, you know, to make it search on the more obvious stuff and to be expandable to stuff you don't know about in the future. I think taxonomies have a public sort of fronting or public setting. I'm not entirely certain on that. But, you know, yeah, that makes sense. I agree with it.
Okay. That was just my selfish question of the evening.
Most likely what would happen if you were to put in a patch for that is somebody would see it and say, hey, that's a good idea. Why don't we make it more generic?
Right.
And make it cover this and this and this. And it sort of makes it even better. And that iteration is what is really useful, I think. Mm-hmm. Because then you end up with something you didn't even think about, you know. And,
mm-hmm.
I've seen that happen. That's happened to my patches a dozen times.
Sure. Yeah, I need to dig into that then. Because I've had three props in core and none this cycle, which is a bummer. But we get back into it.
Well, you know. Everybody's got like their site-specific plugins. I've got like a dozen. Mm-hmm. I've put like a dozen on Matt's site, and you know, little minor things that change some one little thing.
I love freaking people out on Twitter when they get into those conversations that mean next to nothing about, you know, how many plugins you're using, and they're like, oh yeah, I talked to somebody today who had like, you know, 30 plugins running. It's like, that's nothing.
Yeah, I've whittled it down to like 60 now, so, you know.
Well, I think it all depends on the user, guys. I am very comfortable seeing you, Otto, Ryan, running 100 plugins because you kind of know what's going on there.
Well, that's, I mean.
You have a different vetting process.
Right.
You're understanding what you're installing. You know what it's doing. When you have a typical end user running 60 to 100 plugins, I guarantee that their vetting process isn't the same. And then they run into 100 different problems because of those plugins that are installed. So it just, I think the use case differs, right?
Oh, well, yeah. I mean, you obviously don't want to install a bunch of plugins you don't know about.
Sure.
Actually, I'm looking right now. I've got 54 active plugins, counting the network activated ones. So there you go.
Let me see. Now I got to pull it up. You're throwing numbers around. It's actually, I think, pretty much the same as it was the other day when I answered. It's like.
Actually, I was talking to Matt about that on his own site because I sort of manage his stuff now along with Nason.
Mm-hmm.
And he complained to me the other day. He's like, I went to the plugin screen and I saw that I had like 50 active plugins. I'm like, yeah, but I wrote like half of them.
Right.
Because most of them are just little one-liners to do one little thing. And the thing was, he had a lot of that in his theme, you know, like the stuff to do the photo gallery stuff and all that. And I took it out of his theme and put it in a plugin just so I could turn it on and off and manage it as a single unit. And I'm like, yeah, you had all the same code as before. It's just I put it in plugins,
right?
For management reasons.
Well, that's
that makes more sense.
Yeah, I mean, and I still have I try to like I have a single site functionality plugin that I have all sorts of odds and ends in. But whenever it makes sense, I move that stuff out into its own plugin because it's a lot easier, like you said, to move it around and use it elsewhere.
Oh yeah, I've got like anything that does one thing, even a one-liner, I'll make it its own plugin.
Yeah, if you can give it a title, preferably a clever one, like
mm-hmm.
all the better to be on its own.
I was actually thinking about writing a plugin that would let me very quickly create a new plugin. Just for that.
Yeah, reason. I was going to say that. Write a plugin that writes a plugin for you. That'd be legit, dude.
Yeah, I was going to use that to easily make new site-specific plugins just where I can toss in one or two lines of code that I've already tested somewhere else and just, you know, pop it into a screen and hit save and boom, instant plugin already activated with a custom name.
The other thing that can add up as far as number of plugins, at least for me, is not even necessarily stuff that changes the site on the front end, but things that tweak the dashboard behavior a little bit here and there. I'll end up having a bunch of those over time. Like I added one that wasn't actually, I forget who put it together originally, but it wasn't actually a standalone plugin, which it probably should be, but it just does nothing but save the WYSIWYG editor scroll bar position when you save the post.
Ooh,
so you don't have to scroll back down each time. Just like little stuff like that only is ever going to affect, you know, that one dashboard page you're on. But obviously that is another plugin that's running, but it's not going to, you know, run against your site performance or anything crazy like
that. Well, I have 122 plugins installed on Dre.im, and they're all variations of Hello Dolly. It just depends what mood I'm in.
Nice. Where's the plugin that just rotates one of those out each week?
Oh, well, yeah. See, these are all child plugins of that plugin.
Nice.
They're all named I Love Nason.
Wait, Otto, you use the plugin theme editor built into WordPress?
Constantly.
Why? Why do you do that? Don't do that.
Cowboy Cody, brother.
Why? Yes. Oh, my gosh.
It's not hard. Look, it's not hard. You just got to do it. You just got to type in the right code the first time. It's not that difficult.
Just don't make mistakes.
Yeah, it's very what simple. Happens if you've had one too many PBRs, man?
Oh, that's when the code becomes really good.
It just gets exciting.
Well, that's
when you're living life on the edge, man. You got to have some experience.
Code drunk, QA sober.
Look, I firmly believe in the Ballmer curve.
Oh boy. Ah, man, now we're wearing sombreros. This is good.
I'm not sure I get that particular reference, but.
Oh, the Ballmer Peak?
No. Sorry, the sombreros. I missed those. I get the Ballmer Peak entirely. That's legit.
Oh yeah.
IRC, my friend. IRC. That's all I got.
The sombrero. What was the sombrero thing? Cowboy coding. There was a thing. It was Jake that I heard it from. Every time you use code on a live site, you have to wear the pink sombrero. I believe I heard that last at WordCamp San Francisco. And now the pink sombrero is when you're cowboy coding. we can code it live.
I can dig it.
You know, I'm guilty of it. Can't say that I'm not. So this is kind of fun.
I'll tell you, this Bud Light still sucks.
This is great.
Hurts my soul.
Hello, hello.
Hello.
Hey.
Is he there?
Ooh. I'm here.
Hey, Nathan.
You brought Andrew on?
He was around.
On audio?
Yeah, he's there. Maybe he's not talking. Or
okay.
His audio is not working.
It must have been when I was taking care of the pink pony.
No, just now.
Hey, guys.
There he is.
Mr. Andrew, what's up, brother?
I've been listening for most of the two podcasts, and the only thing that actually made me want to jump into the conversation was Otto talking about how much he loves the theme and plugin editors. Otto, I think we're going to have to get you a pink sombrero for your birthday, and we're just going to have you walk around at a WordCamp or something.
Wow.
Hey, I'm just saying, as long as you don't get it wrong, it works great.
Yeah, and what happens when you get it wrong?
You know, that's never come up. Last I remember, it wasn't me that broke WordPress.org.
Woo-goo, woo-goo, woo-goo. Hey, we're not putting anybody on blast. It's the aftertaste.
To be fair, I made the change, but I didn't push it live.
So you're saying it was you?
No, I hadn't pushed it live yet. You just happened to deploy it.
Which team was this? Because you've broken .org a few times now.
See, this is when we need Brad.
We need a scoreboard here.
Yeah, we need to chime in with our funny soundboard.
I have broken .org. I will admit it. I have broken .org more than one time.
Which one are you referring to, though? Because I'm trying to remember.
There was a change I made in my Facebook plugin, and it was temporarily broken. And then you happened to do a deploy, and it broke the site. Or it broke the blog, not the whole site, just the blog.
Right.
And I fixed it and re-pushed. It was down for all of 15 minutes.
No big deal, just 15 minutes.
I'm pretty sure that's your fault.
It was totally my fault, but I didn't know you were actually doing stuff at the same time. That was when we did the thing back in January.
Yeah. So that's why SVN externals and Git submodules are both terrible.
This is true.
I've always wondered about that. So since I feel like I have both sides of the coin now, can you justify to me why you can even edit themes and plugins from the dashboard? Like, that doesn't even really make sense to me as a good idea. But Otto, you seem to like it.
I was annoyed when they took away the ability to edit core from the dashboard.
Wow.
That seems way worse.
It was in there back in 2.5, 2.6. Like the generic, the general file editor that let you edit any file.
Mm-hmm.
I was really annoyed when they took that away because, well, you know, I was on GoDaddy at the time, so editing files was kind of a pain.
You know, there's like three people that should probably be doing that. A couple of them are on this call. Beyond that, it's probably
nobody
very,
ever.
Very bad. Just think it.
I mean, I understand for users, absolutely. There are so many users have learned how to work with WordPress through the theme editor or the plugin editor. I mean, I wrote a lot of code previously, but my first interactions with WordPress code was through the theme editor 5-6 years ago now. Like, I absolutely understand that. But for a seasoned developer, such as Otto, who
oh, here you go, man. Hey, strap on the boots. The shit's getting thick.
I'm not saying it's a good idea for anybody except for me.
I don't think it's a good idea for you either, but okay.
Well,
see, this is why Otto and I don't have root access to any of the servers.
Hey,
this
Andrew, right, I got a question for you, big guy. What are you drinking?
I'm drinking a Sierra Nevada Torpedo Extra IPA.
Nice.
All right. Very, very awesome.
It's a mouthful.
Yeah, say that again backwards, five times real fast.
For the plugin editor, it's not so bad, though, because if you break it, then most likely it's, you're going to break a fatal error and it'll deactivate the plugin.
Yeah.
That's really cool. I like that for plugins. I wish it did that for themes, too.
I was going to say, a theme, you're kind of screwed if you hose it up, man.
A little bit.
But
for plugins, it's pretty handy to be able to do a live edit and then to like, oh, well, you forgot a semicolon, man. So I've deactivated the plugin for a few seconds while you figure out what you did wrong.
Sure.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Then it even spits out the error, the fatal error on the line number, which I thought was really handy.
What I do is I tail my error log, and then I see all of that as well.
I forget you guys. Should a theme set up settings, set up its options on activation or upon save? I don't recall. What would you say on that one?
Say it again.
Should a theme?
Should it or does it?
Well, should a WordPress theme instantiate its options when you activate the theme, or when you save the options?
Oh, you're bringing up the default thing.
Yes. Default. It's default settings. Should it default right on? Yeah, because you guys don't agree.
We don't disagree. We don't agree on this one either.
Yeah.
I don't like activating a theme saving stuff to my database.
Nope. And don't force me to save shit. I should have the option to do that. I'm just speaking from an end user perspective. When I want to activate something, I will tell you to activate it.
And I think that's really important now with a theme customizer, because a theme, you can customize a theme that isn't active. So if it saves stuff to your database just by using the customizer on it, that's kind of weird. It can be done safely, don't get me wrong.
Sure.
Not sure that most theme authors are going to do that safely.
That's what I agree with. I mean, if I had to recommend to a theme developer what they should be doing, absolutely, they should not be saving something by default. That said, a developer who does know what they're doing, I don't see anything wrong with that. In most cases, it's actually going to be preferred to do so.
Hmm. I think it can be done properly. I just don't think it's really obvious how to do it properly. For a theme developer. For a plugin developer, yeah, once it's activated, they have an activation function. They can do whatever they want. And that makes sense. I get that for plugins. For themes, themes are very specific to what they're doing and what they're trying to do. And for it to say, just because I'm now running your function's PHP file, that I can do stuff to the database, not the best way to go.
I don't know. It could be, I think, more simplistic than that. I mean, look at some of the themes with options around, do I want a text logo versus an image logo?
Well,
obviously that's rudimentary. I'm just throwing out the concept out there. Don't tell me what I should or shouldn't do, right?
Well, I mean, like, the thing is, like a theme, it's going to be either doing git option or git theme mod. Probably git option, because nobody uses git theme mod. Both of those have a sort of default value that you can use. And there is a way, it's kind of a complex, annoying way, Chip's documented it, to do that with arrays of options where you sort of merge your defaults into what you get back from the options.
Sure.
At the time you use them. And that's the difference. The difference is whether you're setting the option as setting a default option by default if it doesn't exist, or whether you're getting an option and then when it doesn't exist, you use a default instead. I think it's better to use a default instead at the time you're actually using that default, even though that's in more places. To recognize when the theme, when the database doesn't have your option and use a default is more sane and a lot safer.
See, here's the issue. The problem is that then you have to code for multiple situations. So not only do you need to code for an example would be, not only do you need to code for the option is in the database, okay, let me use this as a default, but also if someone goes to the options screen and hits save changes and does nothing else, suddenly all of the actual defaults just got saved in the database. This poses a bit of a problem in some cases, because now you're actually trying to deal with two different ways of having default values. what actually constitutes a default value. For example, in 2011, there are actually the default values change based on other default value, based on other option values. So depending on whether you save it first or check it first, it actually can cause some problems there.
I agree and disagree. I think if a user saves, then that's a user action, and it's perfectly okay to save the default value to the database because that's what the user had selected in whatever screen they had, and they actually hit a button that said save. As far as with your defaults changing other defaults, there is that, but it's a pretty rare case. I mean, in the case of 2011, it's using it, I think, for the header stuff, right? So you're either it tends to be sort of a checkbox situation where if you check a certain box, then it uses one set. If you check a different box, it uses a different set. I think that tends to be like those are actually different sets of options usually, not necessarily the same option used twice. You're sort of overloading there. You're right that it can be confusing depending on your particular options. But it's not confusing enough to not have to work around.
I guess people who are listening should note that it's a very nuanced situation that Otto and I have slightly differing opinions on. But for the most part, I mean, we agree, write sensible code. The one thing, though, that I'm not trying to argue is I'm not trying to say that using a default without putting it in the database is extra overhead, as Brandon said in the channel. It technically is. It would generate an extra query if the option doesn't exist in the database, but that query is going to be so fast that in reality, it's probably not going to change anything. And that's really it's just not a very good argument for this situation, which is why I am, not actually going down that route. That said, if you were Weaver, you might have a bit of an issue there. Then it might be a little slow. Weaver might be a little slow, but that's
it. Well, the thing that Weaver is doing, and the thing I argued with Bruce about, Bruce is the guy who created Weaver, argued with Bruce about this. He was actually taking all those options and building basically a CSS file that has all of the options sort of saved, and he just loads that CSS file. We had arguments over how to use the file system properly because he was doing that. And that's the main argument I have with having a ridiculous quantity of options there. If he was to not use a CSS file, yeah, Jesus, the overhead on that is huge. I mean, he's got 400 odd options there, But the way he's doing it, it makes it fast and efficient, just not necessarily, in my opinion, the safest possible way of doing things. But he did come around, and I think he's using the file system stuff now, so it works pretty well.
Otto, can you elaborate there? What do you mean by not the safest?
Well, you remember that post I wrote about using the WP file system? Basically, I talked about having a theme or a plugin create a new file is not safe in certain cases, especially on shared hostings. On some shared hostings, it is totally not safe because you're essentially having the web server create your file for you, and it's going to do so with the web server credentials, not your credentials. Then you're loading that file into your live site.
Indeed.
Which means that anybody else on that web server now can modify your file because it's got the web server credentials and affect your live site.
Who likes that happening to them? Not many.
In the case of CSS, it's not safe, but it's not exactly, it's very hard to exploit. I saw a theme that was doing the same thing, but it was saving its options by doing a var export on its options and saving it as a PHP file.
Uh-huh.
And it was writing a PHP file that it then loaded. And so anybody on the site could basically, anybody on that shared server could essentially rewrite your PHP for that one file, which means they have arbitrary access. They can do anything they want.
Indeed.
Using WP file system works around that. And I'm pretty sure Weaver's actually doing that now. He's got a pretty clever way of doing it. But WP file system, you have to put in your FTP credentials or whatever, and it will then write it with the correct credentials because you're actually giving it the right credentials. So that's the problem with writing files. The themes should, in general, not have to write files. If you have enough options, if you have enough options to warrant it for speed reasons, you might have too many options. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, the whole idea of file system operations in themes. I mean, the theme review guidelines are really, really extensive. And I mean, Otto, we've talked about this plenty of times. How, like, in some cases, you know, they probably, like, they have thought of everything to include. I wish that using WV file system and writing files to disk was just something that themes never did. it's just such a bad idea, I think. I mean, especially for things like options and CSS files and all these other things. I mean, there's a lot of interesting things going on there. I feel that that's too complicated to go into a theme in most cases.
It definitely is too complicated, but there's people that are going to do it. There are people that are putting it in the kitchen sink into themes. And if they're going to do it, at least using WP file system is safe. And I'm okay with teaching people how to do it, even though I tell them, look, you really don't need to be doing this in the first place. It's better than them just doing, you know, put file contents, because that's just terrible. There's no reason for that. So I'd rather them do it the safe way if they're going to do it anyway than for them to do it the unsafe way, which is the most obvious way.
Which through the theme review process, any of that's going to get vetted. But to your point, the grand scheme of things, it's probably not the safest thing to do.
Oh, well, ignoring theme review, the outside of the theme check code, the uploader on WordPress.org has a few security checks, and you cannot have put file contents in your theme, period. It's just not allowed. Anything I can think of security-wise that's obviously wrong is outside of theme check. It simply will not allow it. We do not allow insecure themes on WordPress.org under any circumstances. If I find it, I'll kill it. And thing is, what's secure on a VPS may not be secure on shared hosting. And a lot of people, including plugin authors and theme authors, are just not savvy enough to grasp that, because it's not obvious. I mean, it took me a while to realize the danger. So, you know, somebody that's just writing a theme, their first theme, not going to notice that. They're thinking, oh, that's a good idea. So.
And for new theme authors out there, or anybody that's looking to get a theme into the theme repository, hell, even creating something that's going to go, as we coined earlier, something we didn't want to talk about, a premium theme or something that you're going to sell, it's a good idea to go send it through the theme review process. A bunch of brilliant guidance around what you should and shouldn't do in terms of creating a theme and putting that out to people. It's a pretty rigorous process, and if you can pass through it and get through every single step and get the green light, you're probably doing it the right way.
Well, yeah, all those go through, you know, human eyeballs.
Absolutely.
Generally, security issues aren't a big deal on themes anymore, since we block the most obvious things, you know, Base64 and stuff like that.
Sure.
When one does come up, the theme reviewers usually flag me on it, and I go and look at it. It doesn't happen as often as much anymore. I think it happens once every month.
You know, I saw a big dip in that, Otto. I've been part of that. I haven't been active in terms of reviewing themes for quite a while, but I saw it from its infancy into where it's developed as in terms of process today. So I see a lot of your interaction there and everybody else. Man, it's super kick-ass to see the whole review and vetting process to get your theme up there, right? So now I've got my theme up on the repository. That's a big feat. I mean, from a theme developer standpoint, it's a pretty gratifying experience because you've done all of these things the right way. The process is pretty thorough, and I'm impressed by the way that it's being handled today. I hope that one day we have the opportunity to do something similar from a plugin perspective, although that's a bigger task and challenge to tackle, being the scope in comparisons to any theme that's out there today. You know, you're talking potentially thousands of lines of code, depending on the type of plugin. Do you guys see any movement in that direction? I mean, I know that there has been some things put in place to try to mitigate some of the risk around bad stuff going on there. But do you guys see some movement there from a process perspective when vetting and reviewing plugins being pushed into the plugin repository?
Well, there's been a lot of more scanning. Actually, Nathan knows more about the stuff Scott's been doing than I do, the scanning stuff.
Yeah, there's a lot of there's two aspects of the scanning alone that we're doing. There's a lot of automatic scanning that happens with every commit, and in some cases, actually, we're looking for very, very, very specific things that we're flagging and taking action on within minutes. In some cases. Sure. There are certain things that actually cause my phone to make incredibly loud noise for me to be able to make sure that I can take care of whatever is going on. I'm absolutely not kidding. Thankfully, it's only happened twice. The other thing is that all of us at this point, most of us have checkouts of the entire WordPress plugin directory. And so we're actually able to look for very particular things. So for example, if we start getting a lot of reports of plugins that phone home, for example, that, you know, on activation, they take the admin email address and the URL of the block and send it to a Gmail address, or whatever it is, we don't allow those in the directory. Just for privacy reasons more than anything. And so if we ever see that, then we've actually, I mean, Scott, for example, did this. He started scanning the directory and finding dozens of plugins that did this in certain ways. And we ended up just flagging them, emailing all the authors to take care of it. Another good example actually was just the word, using WordPress in a domain, which is against the trademark. We actually scanned for all plugins that did this because we started getting a few reports of them. And then we were able to put all of the authors on notice, let them know they need to take care of things. And then after a week, a lot of them had already changed and gone to something else. Some of them didn't realize they were doing something wrong. And then we were able to take care of the rest of the plugins pretty easily. So a lot of the scanning that's taking place could be spammy, could be, you know, spam related. It could be security related. There's a lot of really interesting things that are happening both on an automated and manual level. And we're always kind of looking to make those even stronger, but that's kind of the approach now, what we're doing.
Well, I think it's a continual process improvement thing. And I think that you guys are moving, in terms of how it's maturing, in the right direction. I like what I'm seeing for sure. You guys see any other controls that may be put in place here in the near future?
None I know of at the moment. We're kind of just doing it as we go along. As far as that sort of thing goes, we're still trying to come up with a good system for doing it, a good mechanism, that sort of stuff.
How can we all get involved and maybe help out with that a bit more?
Well, the big thing we're trying to do now is really build out our tool set. And so whether that's tools that we can provide to users, for example, trying to get an idea for how well supported a plugin is or how active a plugin is, whether it's tools that we can provide to developers. So for example, a lot of the different things that we did over the last week, or tools that we can provide to us for dealing with tracking plugins and things like that. So we actually have tools that enable us to very quickly pull up one person's complete history on the plugin repository.
Oh, awesome.
So we can really quickly get an idea for all the plugins they have, whether they're open or closed, whether they were rejected, whether they haven't been updated in more than 2 years because those no longer appear in search, other authors that they're associated with. We're able to pull all this information really quickly and get a pretty good snapshot idea of what's going on. I think one of the things I want to work on next is a way to report a plugin for particular reasons. So everyone knows about plugins at WordPress.org, or everyone here, I'm sure, knows about that email address. But maybe if we can come up with a reporting mechanism for, not just this plugin is broken, because that that's not what we're getting at. But
sure,
dealing with things like, you know, this plugin does this and it violates the guidelines. So, you know, this plugin places a link on the front end that is spammy or whatever it might be. You know, this plugin has I think I've identified it as a security issue or whatever, you know, any of these different options. I think that could perhaps be a really good way to get, you know, literally hundreds of people involved very quickly. But we need to make sure that we have tools in place also to deal with, you know, the volume of requests that might occur from that as well. And a lot of them might just be false positives. So we need to kind of figure out the best way to present this that doesn't cause every plugin in the world to be flagged by someone who doesn't know how to use it, or they think it's broken, or it doesn't work on WordPress 2.3 that they're running, or whatever it might be. So,
14,000 plugins. I mean, I would imagine it'd get a bit overwhelming pretty quickly.
Yeah, Mark Riley, who works at Automattic, and he's been volunteering with the plugin directory since it's really started, as far as I know. He deals with a good dozen or more plugins a day in some regard, and that's not including the submissions that are coming in.
That's insane.
So there's quite a bit of stuff going on there. And it's a constant talk, too, about, you know, what our guidelines are, what our policies are. I mean, the change to the licensing was probably, you know, 2 months of on and off conversations to make sure that we got it right.
Well, sure. I stand corrected. Ryan just posted 19,523 plugins right now. That is just brilliant.
Yeah. I mean, there's also this, you know, there's also this thing where I think I might have lost my train of thought. That's all right. What are we talking about again? We're talking about plugins, I think?
Well, it wasn't trains. It was more like boats and stuff.
Reporting them.
Plugins. Yeah, the making reporting sure piece.
Infrastructure in place to handle the response.
Oh, sure. Plugin. All of these guidelines. I was just kidding, guys. All of these guidelines, though, we have to kind of figure out what we want to exactly enforce and how we want to enforce them. Because some of them are going to be more serious than others. Sure. And some of them, you know, some things aren't even in the guidelines. Having an insecure plugin is not, it's not against the guidelines. It's just something that obviously is something we're going to take care of.
That's one that hits home pretty hard to me. And you guys have made some, at least from an experimental standpoint, some very crucial, use cases or test studies that you guys have implemented here recently that I know I blogged about in trying to mitigate that, or at least enable a better awareness to everybody that may be using those type of plugins. And I think those are the type of changes that are going to really positively change the way that you guys are handling this. Any take on that and how you guys may expand that in the future?
Well, I mean, security is only one thing. I mean,
sure.
I'm really surprised about the incredible efforts that are going place just to deal with spam. These people they love to try and game and trick us as much as possible.
It's a lot
of work just to keep, you know, things like the newest plugins list okay. To do things like watching their first commits or their first versions. And when we start doing that, we're going to have to start watching their second commits and their second versions.
And that will come, Andrew.
It's already happening now. I mean, Otto says it well. I believe the guidelines basically just say how not to be a spammer.
Yeah.
There are a lot of people who think that they can be a spammer. I mean, as an one thing that we're doing, for example, for a few months now, is that all of the links on a plugins or email are nofollow.
Mm-hmm.
And this isn't ideal for a lot of plugin authors. It's not at all. But unfortunately, there was just so much, there were so many opportunities to game that we just kind of had to cut that out of the picture. And what I did, I actually didn't even tell Otto this because it was going to be an I told you so situation. What happened is that I came up with this idea of, hey, you know, maybe with X number of downloads and Y number of favorites or Y number of ratings at a certain rating scale, we would remove nofollow from, you know, from that plugin page. So it kind of gives them an incentive to have if we wouldn't necessarily share the metric of what exactly it does, because we don't want them to game it.
Mm-hmm.
But I just came up with this, you know, came up with this idea.
And it's a great idea.
And so here's the I told you so part. I actually ran calculations to figure out exactly what plugins would get caught by different numbers. And I came up with an algorithm that I think grabbed the top 1,000 or 1,700 plugins or 700, whatever it was. And the one plugin that just barely made the cut, the very bottom of the list, I open it up and boom, spam link right in the middle of the readme. Mm-hmm. Like obvious, you know, selling old car parts right in the middle of the readme. So it's really tough. Like I had this great idea and I was trying to implement it last week and it completely fell flat because, you know, it was just that obvious that there's still issues that we have. Thankfully, we're doing a little better than jQuery is. They joked that they had 100 plugins and 1,000 advertisements for car batteries. Yeah. So they actually have a really interesting post on that on their blog from a month or two ago from the ordeal that they went through. So, but yeah, it's a constant battle. It's an uphill battle. It's an arms race. I mean, security is an arms race. Mm-hmm. Spam is an arms race. Like, there's so many things going on right now. We just have to keep up with it.
The one thing I noticed that the most obvious was as soon as the Google came out with their plus one button, we instantly had an influx of about 300 plugins for it. And I would say maybe 80% of those added spam. Mm. And a lot of them, from the more obvious offers, they didn't add spam in the first version. They added it in the, you know, a commit they added 3 months after they put the plugin in.
Yeah.
So it's like they're already realized that we're checking that first version. Mm-hmm. So they're looking at they're putting the second version or the third version. Or they realize that we're looking at diffs. So they will go and instead of actually committing the change, they'll remove all the files in one commit and add all the new files in the next commit.
Oh, geez.
So that you have to look at the commit across a range to see it. And things like that, they really try very hard to game that directory. And we have to catch all that. And that's really tricky. Hmm. We're not perfect at it. We're actually fairly bad at it. But we're getting there.
Well, I can imagine that'd be... I mean, at any one point, you're not necessarily winning it. You're just, you know, figuring out what next trick they're trying to pull.
Right, exactly. It's a constant battle. And, yeah, that makes it really tricky. So, eventually, we just stopped accepting Google Plus One buttons. We're like, there's 200 in the directory now.
Yeah, I remember that.
Did they not work? You know? I mean,
right.
What do we need another one for? The one that I remember I talked to you about, Ryan, was the currency exchange.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And we're like, yeah, there's 100 plugins that do currency exchange through all different services. And why do we need another one?
I remember that because I pinged you about it because somebody, you know, every once in a while, you know, somebody will get upset and then email me, which makes no sense, but okay.
Right.
And so there's the question about a plugin. There's like, well, why can't my plugin be in the directory? And that's when, you know, found out that, well, there's just so many.
Eventually me and Mark came to the conclusion, it's like, not every plugin needs to be in the directory. I mean, if one of the other plugins didn't work for you, even though there's 100 of them, then maybe the problem is not with the plugin directory. You know, maybe it's yours. And in that particular case with that currency exchange guy, that guy could have been totally legit. He was just like, oh, I wrote this plugin because I needed it for my site and I wanted to put it in the directory to give it away. That's a perfectly great reason to put your plugin in the directory. Mm-hmm. But if there's a dozen others that are doing exactly the same thing,
right,
do we really need it? And we don't want to discourage new plugin authors, but at the same time, we don't need 1,000 plugins to connect to Facebook. Mm-hmm. We don't need 150 plugins to put a Google Plus One button on your site.
Right.
Sorry, go ahead, Otto. You were on the wall when I stopped you.
I was just saying, in those cases, we only really need maybe 10. Actually, one would be enough, but 10 because people are different. I get that. So sometimes we just have to say, no, look, Here's you know, 10 other plugins that do the same thing. If one of them is really close, why don't you modify that plugin and collaborate with that author? I think that improving that would maybe cut down on that. I don't know. I mean, I don't know the right answers. We're just trying to figure it out. Go ahead.
I was just going to say that. I mean, part of the problem, too, is that you know, yes, on one hand, 500 plugins that all do the same thing is a very bad idea. On the other hand, we do only want people to really be finding their code from the plugin directory. And, I mean, there are exceptions to that, of course. There are, you know, marketplaces that are good. There are a lot of premium plugins that are of good quality, and that's understandable. But, I mean, in terms of trustworthiness, the same thing we say is that if you're going to get a free theme, only get it from the theme directory. If you're going to get a free plugin and you don't know what you're doing, you should really be trying to get it from the plugin directory at least. Mm-hmm. You know, and so that's part of a problem too, where we don't want to necessarily reject a plugin and then start seeing, a plugin pop up elsewhere. And this has actually occurred before. A great example was, Trey, what was the name of that plugin? Advanced Search?
That was the one. He stepped away for a second, but that was the plugin.
Yeah, that was it.
There it is.
Yeah. So that plugin, we realized it was spam and rejected it. It never the Advanced Search plugin. It never got into the directory.
That was a correction on that was made available to me. So thank you for the clarity there.
No, sure. But, I mean, it never got in the directory, but he posted it somewhere else, and enough people downloaded it off of, his bad Blogspot URL, and now we have problems. So it's a really difficult balance that's tough to reconcile of, no, we don't want 500 plugins that all do the same thing, but at the same time, we do want to give people an opportunity to host their code on .org because it's safer for users in the end. I mean, in the case of the Advanced Search plugin, I believe it has about 200 downloads. So that's 200 sites that got cleaned up. That's not a bad deal. So it's a really difficult thing. It's a really, really difficult decision to make as to, you know, when should a plugin not be included. But I think we're doing a better job at it than we certainly could be. That's for sure.
Well, it's a tough thing because, like, I mean, different than themes, plugins can be pretty much anything. So, I mean, any sort of, or at least I would imagine, any sort of policy or guidelines that are put together for that are a lot more difficult to do than themes.
It's why we don't have the same kind of theme check that we have for plugins.
Right.
We can't. It's really impossible to do. You can't check that kind of functionality. But, I mean, we're getting there in other ways of, guidelines and trying to automate as much as possible and try to build some more tools. So we'll see.
It's a progression. It's not going to happen overnight. I mean, it's there's a lot of moving parts there to happen. I think it's important as the authority in terms of being the directory that houses all of these plugins and with the millions of sites that have these plugins installed, that there's some level of notification, some level of actionable item that can be taken by all of the users. And I think that there's an inherent responsibility there. And I think that, strides are being taken to make sure that that's implemented at some point. I don't know that it's been there, completely in the past. It has to an extent, but a bit transparent, right? It just kind of happened. And I think that's a concern. There's been a dependency there on external, maybe third party, media, to notify folks, and I think it's important that it's an upfront thing right away when these things happen. So I see it evolving, and I see the right steps being taken. I'm very excited, and hell, I know from my perspective, I'll do anything in my power to be able to assist in that because it's an important thing. That's usually the redheaded stepchild of security, at least in my eyes, is the awareness piece. It's one of those things you just kind of. It's there. It isn't always as efficient as it needs to be. So it's important to really step up the game there, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Agreed.
Wow. there goes again the uncomfortable silence. I think
it's a comfortable silence. I'm comfortable with it.
Otto and I are actually talking out of band here about the idea of, let's say, like whitelisting a plugin from security checks. So, for example, or not even security checks, just checks in general. So, for example, Otto, when he requests a plugin, it just goes right through because it's Otto. But of course, it also brings up another issue of what if Otto's account gets compromised?
That's the problem.
Another huge, and we've seen it happen. Yeah. So like, it's a whole another huge issue.
Well, look at the W3TC stuff. You know, what was it in the last year? There was a few plugins. I think WP Touch.
It was WP Touch. It was W3 Total Cache, and it was last June.
Yeah, all of them pretty reputable plugins in their own right. Right, they've got. You know, trusted developers that they do well. Yep. To be honest with you, pretty kick-ass stuff. But hell, they got compromised. It wasn't anything of their own doing. But all of a sudden, now we've got some issues, right? So that would be the major challenge with that type of whitelisting.
Well, and as soon as you add whitelisting, they become that much more of a target.
Aha! Uh-huh. Wow! Now so they've got before. Free reign of everything, right?
Right. So a lot of what we have to do is it's almost kind of like what Akismet does. Is that Akismet does everything on. You know, on its servers, most of Automattic doesn't have access to its code base. Like it's designed to be this closed source thing. Cause that's what needs to occur for it to be effective. Yeah. And so this example with like nofollow as to at a certain number of these certain statistics, when these stars align, suddenly you no longer have nofollow on your page. Yeah. We can't necessarily expose exactly what we're searching for or all of these algorithms. Or who is whitelisted or what the whitelist even means. So there's a lot of issues there. We already have whitelists in our head. So if a core contributor, submits a new plugin, it's probably just going to go straight through. We're not even going to second guess it. We're not going to ask for the code, anything like that. But obviously there are a whole lot of other issues here.
Well, I think whitelisting, the term in itself, I think makes sense. I think that there are some opportunities to expedite their movement from development stage into getting the plugin into the repository. That's fine, but there still needs to be some type of checks and balance there in terms of what happens if that account is compromised. How do we control that, or at least put some type of control around that? So it might be a after the fact thing. I don't know. I don't know what that looks like, but I get where you're coming from there. That's at the end of the day, everything needs to be vetted in some way or another. You know, especially if it's something from a developer that you know is going to get major traction on a huge plugin that's just highly beneficial to everybody, and all of a sudden you got a million downloads. Imagine if that gets nailed. That's a problem.
Well, after the June thing, we put in the anytime your plugin has changed, it emails you what the change was, and that was specifically in response to that incident.
Gotcha.
And I think now, just this last week, we added the anybody can subscribe to that same email for any plugin.
Yeah, so, this kind of got drowned out with everything else that occurred with favorites and everything else. But if you go to the developers tab for any plugin. You can subscribe to committee emails for that plugin.
So
it's a hidden little feature. Hopefully, you know, I don't know, maybe like a blog like WP Candy might do a post about it at some point or something like that. I don't know.
Well, it was in there when it was added for developers, but it wasn't, you're right. It was drowned out with all of the other updates.
It was. I mean, and that's, you know, and part of that is just kind of the rapid iteration of what happened last week. And actually, I mean, some things were added in weeks before, and they're only kind of getting noticed now. So, but that could be really helpful for developers who are, you know, trying to, let's say, wash a plugin or contribute to a plugin or, you know, wait for the next release or something like that, because they can kind of see what's going on. One more little thing that people might like.
Yeah, I think if you use somebody else's plugin a lot, you know, on a lot of different sites, especially for freelancers that are using plugins on clients, they would probably subscribe to those and get those commits to see what's changing and what they need to know.
Dude, that's instant value. I mean, who are we bullshitting here? That's brilliant. I there's plugins that I use in some pretty large sites that, to me, that's an important value add right away, right? Okay, this is what's going on. I can make decisions around that very quickly. Yeah. That's a great add-on.
Yeah, I love that idea. I think it's very useful.
I like it too.
Wow. I'll tell you, no, all in all, I think everything's moving in the right direction. Wouldn't you guys say, being that at the end of the day, you guys are really a lot of the front line around the changes that are happening today. Where can we get better? I mean, everybody's got their own opinion, but at the end of the day, I see a lot of positive movement.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I will admit, we have a lot of ideas, and I know Otto kind of alluded earlier to this idea of maybe, you know, changing around the front page, and there's a lot more functionality we can bring, and talking about, you know, how favorites could be integrated directly into the dashboard and everything else.
Sure.
But a lot of these, I mean, we have this crazy vision of 2 years down the road or whatever it might be, but some of these smaller things come from people writing up a blog post and saying, this would be great if it could do this, or creating a track ticket or something along those lines, sending someone an email, whether it's Otto, me, or Scott. And I mean, as an example, there were a few things this week actually that came in through email that was just like, hey, it'd be really cool if this one feature also did this. And I mean, I listened to the podcast 2 weeks ago, and that's kind of why some of the security stuff had happened right after that. So, I mean, there's definitely a huge feedback loop here that a lot of people can take advantage of if they want to be able to contribute to what's actually occurring.
I love it. You know, and that's what it comes down to. A lot of times you get folks that maybe a little hesitant to say anything. I think it's important to talk, and that's what it's all about. We are an open community. We're behind the de facto standard in publishing capabilities on the web today. What it comes down to is talking, is contributing, and this is how change happens. So I know I was very excited about the security changes and those kind of notifications that may be coming down the road. If it's something that makes it out of the experimental stage. And it really was a matter of talking about it. Hey, look, this could be a little better maybe. And how can we do that? So I was excited to see that. And really, that's all it takes sometimes. So if you got something on your mind, you need to talk about it.
All it takes is that and an obscene amount of barbecue.
Well, and a lot of fear. Just it's the hopefully not so PBR.
I can't even the anger, the rage, it can't be contained.
I can't even describe how good the barbecue is. That's all I
am
say.
Yet to eat. You guys are jerks. I hate
all the photos, all the descriptions. Ugh.
I actually have a container in my refrigerator, and I'm going to go heat it up when I'm done. That consists of some barbecue from Memphis that I brought back.
And thus concludes the last time you're ever welcome on this podcast.
I'm kidding. I was going to say, Andrew, have I asked you if you're a dick today? But I already did, so I'm just going to tell you again, you're a dick.
Scott said he's already eaten all of his.
Yeah. Well, no, kudos, Scott, guys. Is there any other driving topics we should chat about? Because I tell you, it's...
We just demolished the... just all records that technically there were really no records for this show, but whatever they were or could have been, they are gone now.
We have been on the air going on 4 hours, yeah. And amazing,
yeah,
exciting time. And if there's no other topics, I hate to cut anybody short. You know me, I don't like to talk much.
Yeah, Otto, I think you get to be the person who broke podcasting on WP Candy. Just killed it with a 3.5 hour conversation.
Well, it doesn't hurt. To your own right, Otto, get a T-shirt. Thank you. Bringing Andrew on board is super brilliant as well. So very great debate.
What are you talking about?
Sorry, what'd you say?
I have given you material for at least 3 episodes right here. So.
You're right. No, yeah. I'll be cutting this up. I'll be releasing it daily in 5 or 6 minute chunks for the next month.
I'm going on vacation to the Caymans. Let's go.
There you go. There you go. We don't have to do this anymore. Otto just wrapped it all up for us for the rest of the year.
Hello. Thank you for listening in to our anniversary episode number 10. We are done. Signing off.
Done and done.